This episode of the Rick Emerson Show is made possible by our good friends at Squires Electric, a brand new business partner. Squires Electric is a full-service electrical contractor for all of your residential and commercial needs. You can contact them at 503-252-1609, or for more information, go to squireselectric.com.
Oh, holy night, stars are brightly shining. It is the night of our dear Savior's birth. Long lay the world in sin and error pining, till he appeared and the soul felt its worth. A thrill of hope, the weary world rejoices, for yonder breaks a new and glorious morn.
That is how you celebrate the birth of Jesus, our Lord and Savior, Don.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's quite something. That's how you know the holidays have truly arrived. It's the first playing of O Holy Night on the Rick Emerson Show.
Yeah.
Don't ask, because I have no idea.
I'm so glad you told me I needed to put my headphones on that so
yeah.
I could get the full effect of it stabbing like a knife through my temples.
It's awesome. And the thing about it is, it's not unlike that guy that sang Oh Amazing Grace. That we play every now and again. It's sort of a companion piece to that, actually. Because every time you think it can't get any worse or louder or more piercing or more shriek-laden, it does exactly that. I mean, it's just, that right there, that's almost enough to make you believe in Jesus or God or miracles. or just a kind, caring universe that wants you to be happy.
Or to pray for it.
Or to pray for it, or maybe just to pray for the sweet, warm embrace of death to take you away. Or all of those things at once. It's fantastic. So there you go. I didn't want to play it the day after Thanksgiving. I wanted to wait, just to hang back just a little bit and then to sort of unleash it like a sort of musical hydrogen explosion. So, or explosion, as they say.
Well, I realize that, Thanksgiving is like the starting gun, for the
yes.
Christmas season and everything. But honestly, last night on TV, they had nothing but Christmas specials. There was they showed how the Grinch showed Save Christmas.
Right.
There was one of the Rudolph things, the Shrek the Halls thing was on. I'm like, it wasn't even officially December yet.
No, and that was the thing. It's like Macy's, I think, the final week of September. Macy's, you went in there and they were stapling glittery snowflakes to the walls. And I mean,
I watched The Grinch. Don't get me wrong. I will watch The Grinch anytime, anywhere.
This is the animated special.
Yes.
Not the
Chuck Jones animated special with Boris Karloff and Max and Roast Beast and all of that.
U.S. Chew the movie.
Oh, heavens yes.
Good for you. All right. Well, but that's one of those cliches, though, that is true regardless. When they say, well, it just seems the holidays start every year. But, it wasn't even December until this morning.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. But see, yeah, so I waited until December was actually here.
Thank you.
To uncork that musical gem for everyone. So there you go. And don't ask me who it is, because I don't. It's not Adam Sandler. That's the only thing I know, because people go right to. It's like everything on the internet that's a parody song they think is Weird Al. It's like everything that involves a guy warbling somehow gets tagged as being Adam Sandler. And it just arrived. It's like the birthday thing. It just arrived in the email one day a couple years ago. No information, no labeling or whatever. And I've seen it attributed to 900 different guys. That all I know is that it's glorious. And it really is the beginning of the holiday season here at the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Hello. It is now 29 minutes after the hour of one, and this the month of December in the year of our Lord 2010. My, how the time do fly. Thank you for joining us. It's 503-505-6964. You want to be, if you want, you should get with the talking today. 503-505-6964 with your comments, questions, clarifications, commentary, amusements, ruminations, ponderings, recipes, whatever it is you have to share with us on this fine Wednesday. It's 503-505-6964. You can also text if you'd like to the Skype account, which is Rick Emerson Show. That is our Skype name. The text box open on the website. You can also email as well. That's rick@rickemerson.com. rick@rickemerson.com. Dawn Taylor can be reached at Dawn, D-A-W-N, at rickemerson.com. That is D-A-W-N. At rickemerson.com. By the way, don't forget, we are going to be giving away five Christmas trees, courtesy of Christmas Mountain Trees. And you can find out more about that company at christmasmountaintrees.com. We are giving away five Christmas trees, courtesy of our fine business partners, Christmas Mountain Trees. And we are going to be two separate things, sort of here. One is that we're going to be there this Saturday. So that is this Saturday, December 4th, 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. Dawn Taylor, myself, our respective significant others, I think Cheryl and Bruce are going to be there as well, the whole ENN family, will be at Christmas Mountain Trees this Saturday, the 4th, from 9 to 11. You can find driving instructions, all of that stuff, at their website. That is christmasmountaintrees.com. There's also a Facebook page, facebook.com/christmasmountain, where they do weather updates and whatever. But we're going to be there this Saturday, so if you've been waiting to get your tree, or you're trying to find the right day to do it, that is the right day. There is no righter day than that. That is this coming Saturday from 9 a.m. To 11 a.m. Now, in conjunction with that, we're giving away five Christmas trees from that fine company. And here's how you enter for that. It is so simple a child could do it, Dawn.
But a child shouldn't.
Well,
or should they?
I don't really care. Look,
what's a child going to do with a full-grown Christmas tree?
Stare at it in wonder? Hello?
Besides, what is a child doing listening to the show anyway? Really, we talk about things that are inappropriate.
Staring at it in wonder? Hello? it doesn't matter. This is not this isn't like CBS. I don't care. Doesn't matter. We could just give away knives.
Maybe
you know?
It's so simple that a feeble-minded adult could do it.
And they probably will, Dawn. Well, here's all you got to do. You just send the. Really, it doesn't even have to contain any text. It could just be like, want. You just send it to a tree, that is T-R-E-E, at rickemerson.com. You send an email to tree@rickemerson.com. And all we ask is this, is that you be able to pick up the tree. Doesn't have to be the Saturday, but that you be able to pick up the tree from Christmas Mountain Trees. And I think that you not be a jackass. I think it's a subjective assessment,
We're
I suppose.
We're not going to ask them for anything, like to share a Christmas memory or a cookie recipe or...
No, I'm going to extort things later on in the year, but I figure for this, you know, because it is... Here's the holiday. The holidays are about giving, not about getting, Dawn. And so I feel like this is... We get enough amusement and, let's be honest, money from the listeners anyway.
So there's no trade-off here. This is purely giving.
This is a purely... we're just being philanthropic here. It's a purely give-based promotion.
We're awesome.
We rule.
Really. Man.
There's nobody better than us.
No.
We are as living gods,
Dawn. I wish we were us.
It's like we came straight from Kolob. So you just send an email to tree@rickemerson.com, and five random emails will be selected. Those folks will win a tree from Christmas Mountain Trees. But again, we do ask that if you win it, that you'd be able to go there at some point and pick it up. And if you can do it this Saturday, hey, so much the better for you, because then you get to see us. And that's you can't put a price tag on that. That is an opportunity both wonderful and irreplaceable.
You get to watch Dawn with her titanium hips and her bad knee. When she finds out if she's actually going to be able to clamber up into the festive Christmas wagon without any kind of special assistance.
It's like Christmas comes five or six times, really. I mean,
And considering I have done things in the past, like just I dove head first, face down into the back of a taxi once, because it was one of those vans. And the step up was about like as high as my waist.
Like you were getting in the cash cab and just.
Yeah, and I couldn't get in, and so I was like, "Crap!" So I just had to like sort of dive in, and then once I was inside, climb up while I was inside the van. So.
But that wasn't embarrassing.
Because, you know, first I have short little legs, and then I'm all crippled up. So. So we'll see. We'll see how this works. I'm actually thinking about bringing like a little ladder or something, just so that I know that I can do this without humiliation.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's you know, I suppose you could always just stand on Bruce Agler. We could just have him kneel over. And you just, you know, sort of right up.
Yeah. But you know something? Chubby girls don't like to get, like, hands up or step up on people's backs because we feel like it just sort of reinforces to everyone how much we weigh.
We'll all step on Bruce Agler.
Okay.
And it'll be like hop on pop.
It could be a new holiday tradition.
Stepping on Bruce Agler. Snap Bruce Agler's spine. It's a holiday tradition for the entire family.
He'll tinkle like tinsel.
It is the Rick Emerson radio program. Coming up today, we got your penis. You can tell it's Christmas because there's a penis watch, a corpse watch, hick watch coming up. Let's see. We'll also do today's top five. Top five David Bowie songs of all time. And this was... Now, did you put this together or is a friend of yours
responsible
for this?
A friend of mine put this together. He is a delightful human being who actually let me borrow his car while he was in England for Thanksgiving because he's that kind of a guy.
He's a good egg.
He just decided to give up the whole, you know, holiday thing and just go and rent a cottage, you know, on the North Sea and go to like museums. So anyway, but while he was gone, I was driving his car, and right before he went out of town, he is a listener, and he said that I had done a top five, and you had expressed displeasure with the David Bowie song, and it wasn't
displeasure. I said that to be fair, and I want to right here. This is how urban legends get started.
Okay.
It was not displeasure. In fact, I think I specifically noted it is that I was almost, it was just that I was just sort of indifferent to it.
Yeah.
I lacked the Bowie receptor.
Right.
And I couldn't tell if it was good or not.
And it was minor Bowie, but the thing is, Bobby sent me an email and said that since he and I both have an appreciation of David Bowie, and you know, for better or worse, you are not an appreciator of the Bowie,
right,
that perhaps he could put together a nice list, if you will, like a primer for those who don't understand why Bowie is terrific. And so
it's an overview.
Yeah, sort of a top five Bowie song, so you can go, this is why those of us who love David Bowie love him.
All right, excellent. Okay, so that's coming up later on today. So we'll do the top five David Bowie songs of all time. Also, another installment of the greatest songs ever made. I can just tell you, I'm not lying about this. It's impossible for me to say certain things without sounding insincere. Like, I just sound corny. You know, it just sounds like I'm making stuff up. I will say, quite honestly, so I was writing the, you know, because that's a scripted thing. So I was writing out the script, the copy for Greatest Songs Ever. And it was really, I actually got like little chills while I was writing it. So it's going to be quite something. So that's coming up later on. Also, Kelly Clark from Willamette Week will join us. So Penis Watch, Corpse Watch, Hick Watch, Greatest Songs Ever Made, Top 5 David Bowie Songs. Kelly Clark from Willamette Week. That is all in the way. Plus, Dawn Taylor is tracking the following headlines for you on this Wednesday.
The FCC is going to vote on net neutrality. Washington's governor is mad at Camel cigarettes. and a woman makes a holiday butter sculpture.
Awesome. Don't forget the Rick Emerson Show brought to you today and every day by folks like Sorrell's Vintages, in business since 1990. They are located at 3713 Southeast Hawthorne. 3713 Southeast Hawthorne, right across from the Baghdad Theater, right next to Powell's Books. One side of the store all vintage, the other side new merchandise. You can find them at 3713 Southeast Hawthorne. So there you go. So that is all on the way today. And so forth. All right. Just a couple of notes before I ask you, because I don't know what my last. Here's what my night was last night. Just I'm not going to talk about it a whole lot because you're not watching Sons of Anarchy, but you know, you're sort of back on the first season.
I have just started season two.
Really? See, season
I am
two.
I've just begun the. I'm halfway through the second episode of season two.
Season two is great. You know, it's not season one is good. Season three is good. Season two, I think, is the best so far. Have you met Henry Rollins yet?
Yes. Well, he appears in the first.
Does he?
Episode.
I couldn't remember if he was there in the.
Yeah,
first.
Yeah, there's that coffee shop scene with him and Adam Arkin.
Yeah. Adam Arkin is great. He played Jed Bartlett's shrink on on the West Wing. I dig that guy. So Sons of Anarchy season three ended last night, and I got to tell you, it's just one of those shows. As much as I've had problems with season three, it's not bad. It's like a bad episode of insert show that you love here, like a bad Battlestar or something. It's still good. It's still better than most things on television. Season three, they've overreached a little bit, in my opinion. They've tried to do too many plot lines, and they've tried to make the show too sweeping in its scope. But it's like I'm probably like you in that I would almost rather see that than to see them just like do some crap formula, where it's just they're repeating the same garbage over and over again. I would rather have them swing and miss, but swing big than to just like have them go like, and we're just gonna recycle season one over and over again every year until we can all retire. But I got to tell you, it all came back home last night. It was not unlike the Californication season three experience I had, where however I felt about the rest of the season, the third season finale for Californication is like one of the best things I've ever seen on television. Last night, the third season finale for Sons of Anarchy, it was really, really good. Somebody says right here, all caps, dude, the Sons season finale was effing epic. Probably the best episode of the entire series. It was great. It was so great. It was actually, and Seamus emailed, our friend Seamus emailed me at 4 in the morning with this long sort of, spoilers contained, but oh my God, Sons of Anarchy for the win, and just this whole huge dissertation about the season finale. And then he sent me another one like 45 minutes later. He was just like, and also, and he just couldn't contain it. It was really, really good. And when you get to season three, here's what you're going to have the pleasure of. You were going to have the pleasure of an actress named Allie Walker. And you may or may not be familiar with Allie Walker.
Yes.
She is...
Well, she was already in season... She's the ATF agent.
She's the ATF agent. And I think she has... She's there to some degree, I think. Is she already on... See, it's been a while since I've seen season two, so I don't know when she appears.
She was in season one, because remember she got the crap kicked out of her, and she was sleeping with the hunky and
with,
second
Hale.
In line. Yeah, with Hale.
I thought that was season two.
No, that's it. That was season one.
Ah, okay. So, I got to tell you. So as great as she is in season one, season two, she comes into full flower in season three. Like, it is all... She is... I mean, I'm not giving anything away here, but she's basically the big bad to some degree. They're sort of co-big bads, but she's one of them in season three. And I got to tell you, man, she is fantastic. I don't know if she's ever been nominated for anything. I don't know what else she's ever done. I don't know what else I might have seen her in. But if she doesn't get an Emmy nomination for this season of Sons of Anarchy, there is just like no justice, because she is stunningly good. I mean, she is, even on the episodes of the season I didn't care about, she is consistently the best thing about that show.
I just liked her at first because it seemed like her character, she was playing it a little bit over the top compared to the other actors. And then it's like, I don't know if she just got a better feel for the character or she was advised to dial it back a little bit, because she just then seemed to kind of slide into that groove with the rest of the cast. And she was just, between her and Dutch... being like a crazy, awful stalker. There was a lot of creepy in season one.
Somebody says, her name is Agent Stahl. She would have been right at home on the strike team, although Vic would have had to put her down eventually. The thing about that character is, about Agent Stahl, is that even having seen her now for three seasons, at any given point in time, I can never tell if she's lying or telling the truth. You know, when she tells, look, you know, we're going to have to trust each other a little bit here, is the thing that people on that show say, like, all the time.
Yeah.
Look, it's just you and I. We're just going to, we have to trust somebody. And I'm, you know, you just have to believe that I'm not going to double cross you on this. And it's like, you half the time she's lying and half the time she's being straight up about it, but you can never tell. So, yeah, when you get to season three, you really got a treat in store for you. But I got to tell you, it was not unlike The Shield. And not unlike, you know, episodes of The Wire or certain episodes of, like, some of the Whedon things, where it's just such a great show, but at the same time, it's like, ooh, hey, what's that, your soul? Let me step on it! You know, and they just, you know, they just find, like, the tiny little chink in your psychic armor, and then they just jab, like, a red-hot poker into your pain center. It's really good, though, so I can't say enough about it. So that was my night last night. Two real brief things here. One, I say this only because this is one of the little banner ads that I think that pops up, like if you're in the text box or something on the website. It's for a phone now that Motorola's putting out called, here's what you don't want to name your phone, kids. It's called the Motorola Bloggy.
Oh, no.
I have no reason for mentioning this except that I saw it this morning.
No.
Bloggie.
No.
Please buy yourself a Motorola Bloggy. Doesn't Bloggy sound like he's like the worst mascot ever come up with by an electronic somebody? Like he's a, you know, like he's sort of a sort of, I don't know, he's like a like an ink blob looking schmoo kind of character with a hat. Hey kids, I'm Bloggy.
Yeah, no.
I'm Bloggy the blogging avatar. Yeah, and, or he would be there to like, you know, to teach you like proper blogging etiquette, you know, or how not to use profane acronyms or talk about sexting.
Yeah, he's like the retarded bastard cousin of that little dancing paperclip in the bottom of the Microsoft window.
I see you're trying to blog something. Would you like to know a series of emoticons you could use? I'm Bloggy. So yeah, the Motorola Bloggy, Don. Mm-hmm. Buy it for the loved one in your life this holiday season. Let's see, what else do I have? I said the thing yesterday about how somewhere in the world there was the geekiest guy on earth named Will Wheaton, right?
Right.
Was that yesterday?
That was yesterday.
Right. Here's the other one then. Here's what I got. Somebody ought to do a, you know, one of those movie parodies that the kids love so much where they take like the trailer for The Shining and then they put like Salisbury Hill behind it and it becomes like a touching family drama? Or they'll take like West Side Story and they'll recut it online so like the trailer looks like a horror film?
Yeah.
Okay, somebody ought to do some sort of a really like geeky or nerd-tastic movie trailer called The Shiny.
Oh, God.
You know? But it's like, you know, and it's like you somehow take the music from The Shining and like footage from Firefly, or maybe footage from Firefly and clips from The Shining, and then you just make it The Shiny. And then it's just like guys who are like, I don't know, something goes wrong at like a fan convention or like at a slash lit forum or something. The Shiny. That's it. That's all I've got. That's the end of my humor for today.
Okay.
How was your night, Don?
My night was horrible.
Okay.
Well, it wasn't really horrible. I mean, I got some work done. I did a few things, but no, I'm having this battle with my cat. My cat has always been like this weird little cat. I saved her from hillbillies when I worked in St. Helens. This woman I worked with who was just this literally like a hillbilly, and one of their previous cats had died because her son had left a pan full of antifreeze on the floor of the living room, and the cat had drank antifreeze off their living room floor. And so then they had another cat that had kittens, and there was this part of me that just felt like, I am going to save one of these kittens from a life. And so I got Nemo, and Nemo was like the most adorable kitten ever. And while she was a kitten, she was adorable. Then she became an adult cat and became just aloof and snotty.
A hellion.
And just like, I don't really need you.
Became a teenager.
I don't want to be petted. Feed me and then just leave me be. I was like, come on, snuggle with me. No, I really don't want to. And she's become really fixated on, she's always been really fixated on staying in one room. Like, sometimes it'll be the bedroom, and her food and her cat box and everything are in the bathroom off of our bedroom. And so for months, she just lived in the bedroom and would get out of bed and go use the cat box, then get back into bed, and that was it. And we never saw her. She wouldn't come out in the living room. She wouldn't visit us.
She was
like
a boarder that didn't really want to interact with you.
Now she's decided she's going to be in the living room all the time. And so she's staked out the spot in the middle of the floor underneath the dining table. But her food and her cat box and stuff are in the bathroom. And sometimes she just sort of acts like, that's too far to go. So she'll just crap on the floor. So I've decided that's unacceptable. So now every day before I leave for work, I fish her out from under the table and I take her in the bedroom and I stick her in the bedroom and I close the bedroom door. So now she's in a nice, cozy bedroom and has her food and her water and everything. But of course, she's angry about that. She's angry all the time. So, and as soon as you open the bedroom door, she's pew out of there like it's Guantanamo. So last night, it was the thing. She hadn't eaten all day. I knew she hadn't eaten. I'd been home all night, had never seen her go back to the bedroom or use the cat box or eat food or anything like that. She was just, so I was like, so I picked her up and I took her in there and I put her by her food dish and I closed the bedroom door and I was going to bed. And she jumped on the bed and she was by me on the bed and I was like, good night, Nemo. And I actually gave her some treats. I had a little bag of Pounce.
You never learn.
And I gave her some treats and she was like, thank you for the treats. Yum, 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 yum. And I turned out the light, and I got into bed, and I snuggled on down and closed my eyes. And I swear, 30 seconds later, I smell that undeniable smell of cat poop, which happens sometimes. The cat box is in just the next room. I turn on the light, and I swear to God, the cat had crapped in the middle of my bed.
Wow.
Like, while I was in it. Like, right after I turned off the light.
This is what I think of your house and your rules.
Yeah. Thanks for the treats. Crap on your bed. And
wow.
I have been angry at her for pooping places she's not supposed to poop before. Uh-huh. So as soon as I turned on the light, she just looked at me and went, yikes, and ran and hid under a chair.
Okay.
And so then I had to go get toilet paper and clean it up. And then I'd get the OxyFresh stuff and clean the bed and scrub it down. And the cat's hiding under the chair because she thinks I'm going to beat her. And I'm just like,
she's never done this before?
No, not on the bed. So, and I know that there are people out there who are like going to email me and go, you know, when a cat, you know, does something like that,
it's evil.
They're trying to tell you that they don't feel well and there's something going on. No, sometimes cats are just bastards.
They're just evil. They need to be put down with fire.
Yeah.
How old is she?
She's like four or five.
So it's not like an incontinence thing.
No.
Or like she's gotten feeble-minded in her old age.
No.
All right.
No, this was just sheer
nastiness. Just being difficult. Just being obstinate. Because,
yeah.
You know, like, that's the thing is, like, you know, Max is sort of doing something a little similar to that, where he'll go in the house or in the kitchen, and it's always in exactly the same place, and it's like, and Lara has tried to say, well, he's getting older, and I'm like, it's not that he's older, it's just that he's decided that, like, he knows we're not going to get rid of him at this point.
Yeah.
He knows that we're just pot committed, we're not going to have him put down, or we're not going to kick him out in the street, and so we're just that, you know, like, we're not, the other family clearly knew he was evil, and they decided to get rid of him, like some sort of a clockwork monkey or something, and it's, you know, we foolishly, sure, we'd love to have your evil clockwork monkey, and then we took, and so now he's decided, not unlike Nemo, just like, well, look, I figure, you know, like, I've just got you wrapped around my paw, so it's time to just start asserting my independence and showing you who really is boss. And so that's what Nemo's doing, just by pooping on the bed. Now, what are you going to do? See, here's the thing about cats, though, is you can't, like, if a dog does it, you know, if a dog does something, I mean, it's difficult. Even with a dog that's evil, you can train stuff out of them. Even, you know, even an old dog can be, you know, taught new tricks and trained to not do things that it's been doing. You can't train a cat, though. So if the cat keeps doing it, like, well, you have no recourse.
Yeah, I don't know what to do if the cat keeps doing it. Although I don't think she will keep doing it after my response to it last night.
Was it just a lot of yelling and a lot of...
There was a lot of going and moving the chair to get at her where she was hiding in the corner and picking her up by the scruff of the neck and, like, showing her the poop really close to her face and going, you don't do that! And then yelling at her and then, like...
I wish there was a camera in
calling
your
home. Her an effing horrible little monster and...
You should have kids. Lots of kids right now.
This is another example of why I don't have children.
By the way, somebody says, our cat pulled that... The cat whizzed all over the kitchen counter. The animal shelter had one new cat a day later. So my brother... It's funny, because my brother was in town this past weekend. My brother and my sister-in-law. And so they have a dog. It's like some... It's a weird-looking dog. It's like a something ridgeback something.
Oh, yeah. Rhodesian ridgeback.
Yeah, it's that. And they have a particular... Like, I have no particular affinity for different kinds of dogs. They're dogs that I don't want. Like, I don't really want, like, a Chihuahua or whatever. But I don't have a particular preference for some dogs. But he's all into that. So they have this dog, Abby, that's, like, this ridgeback. And so they got a new one that's, like, 4 months old. And I swear to God, I wish I had been filming this. I could have posted it. I could have submitted this to like a film festival as some sort of like independent sort of talkie, like a James Toback style film. If I'd been running tape on this, he was taught like early in the conversation. They got a second dog that's 4 months old, and the dog is fine. It's a puppy, and so the thing whines all the time, you know, because it's a puppy, and that's what they do. And it whines, and it doesn't know to go outside, and whatever. And I'm like, you know, the dog's four. That's what it does. And he's just like, I don't know, man. It's a real pain. I'm thinking about giving it back. And I'm like, it's four. And of course, and I said, didn't Abby do that when she was 4 months old? Yeah. And I go, okay, you got a brain like a flea. Your last dog, just give it some time. And he's like, well, whatever. And then I swear to God, like 5 minutes later, without any sense of irony, my sister-in-law, they get this whole thing of, well, we're wondering if we should have kids or not. And I'm like, no, I'll tell you that right now. Right now, and I'm going to save you, you know, whatever counseling you're going to pay for, whatever you do, you're going to go to your shrink or your priest or whatever and ask about this, I'm going to save you the time. The answer is no, don't have kids. So, because like you, it's like you yell at the cat, but if the cat just continues to do it, there's nothing you can do, because the cat knows that it has the upper hand. I mean, really, unless you're going to boot it outside or toss it off a bridge, and cats sense whether or not you're the kind to do that, and they know you're not, you are effed. There is nothing you can do to assert your independence over the cat.
Yeah, and then like a half an hour later, the cat crawls out from wherever she was hiding and then gets into bed. No, she gets in bed with me and wants to snuggle up next to me on the bed.
Yeah.
I'm going to lay on top of you now because, you know, this has nothing to do with the other thing. And like, yes, I know, you have a brain like a pea, so you can't possibly conceive of the fact that I'm still angry at you.
Oh, I know. It's, Max did something a while back. I don't know. He had like, I don't know, Lara had brought some like really expensive tea home from Turkey or something, you know, like some weird apple, pomegranate, persimmon flower tea or something, hibiscus. And, it was not like incredibly expensive, but it was pricey and you couldn't get it here. And of course, she left it somehow magically within reach of Max and his jetpack. And he got it and it was like, you know, tearing it into little pieces in the corner of the house. And he gets real guardy with stuff. So she went over and tried to take it to a bad dog. And he like growled at her and sort of, you know, like kind of did like a quasi snap and then sulked away and stared. And then about 30 seconds later, he came and just hopped up in her lap and did this thing where he just turned around like a Keen painting. And just, you know, looked at her, you know, and is like, this with the huge, big eyes, you know, and just wanting a scratch. And of course, what does she immediately do? Oh, who's mommy's favorite dog? And it's like scratching. And I'm like, you've both got brains the size of peas. God damn. It's like babies and pets, they're like smart be gone. They're like black holes for intelligence. Because normal, rational adults, like, you know, you and me and my wife, just become blubbering retards, you know, in the presence of babies or kittens or puppies. Jesus. All right. Kelly Clark on the way. Penis Watch, Corpse Watch, Hick Watch coming up. Top 5 David Bowie songs, greatest song ever made, and all that. It is the Rick Emerson radio program. This is Don Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Don Taylor.
Washington Governor Chris Gregoire is going after the makers of Camel cigarettes over a new advertising campaign. It features landmarks like the Pike Place Market and Mount Rainier on new hip packs of cigarettes, which tout Seattle as the birthplace of grunge and the coffee revolution. I'm alarmed and disappointed at R.J. Reynolds' new marketing campaign, which exploits the name and image of Seattle to recruit young smokers, Gregoire said in a news release. I call on R.J. Reynolds to halt their cynical campaign and not use our local landmarks for their gain.
Shame. Shame on you, sir.
R.J. Reynolds, makers of Camels and other major brands of cigarettes, told reporters that nothing in the new Breakaway ad campaign is designed to encourage underage youth to smoke. I'm sorry, I couldn't stop laughing there. When Governor Gregoire was Washington's attorney general, she helped lead the fight against big tobacco. We've worked hard to help people break free from tobacco addiction and the suffering and death it causes individuals and families. Washington has 320,000 fewer adult smokers and 65,000 fewer youth smokers than before we started our tobacco prevention and control program.
Really?
10 years
I wonder if that
ago.
Could be because it's a product that kills the user. I wonder if that might have something to do with it. Here's the thing about tobacco companies. I am willing to buy the tobacco companies don't market to kids. I mean, I really am willing to accept that they don't do things to get youth, youths. You can you say youth as like a collective?
You
can, right?
The youth.
Now I don't know. Well, there's a Portland Youth Philharmonic.
I don't know.
Whatever. I'm willing to buy that they don't go out of their way to say, like, how can we make this product attractive to teenagers? But that's the thing is they don't have to. They just try to make the product attractive, like, period.
Yeah.
You know, you would. In other words, you would almost have to do. You would almost have to do an inverse marketing campaign of trying to market it in a way that teenagers themselves found repellent, because they just try to come up with the most interesting. I mean, every company does this. They try to come up with the most interesting and compelling commercial they possibly can, and the best marketing and the best word spreading techniques and methods. And just teenagers just get lumped into that. I mean, they're basically – they're like clear cutting more or less. Yeah. You know, they just like scoop it, – it's like fishing for tuna. You know, some dolphins get in there. Doesn't mean you're going after them. They're just there.
You know, honestly, if the anti-smoking campaigns wanted to discourage kids from smoking, the best way to do it would be to actually start a campaign where they show how cool it is that adults think it is to smoke.
Yeah, with like
and just show a bunch
your
of
dad.
Yeah, middle-aged guys in ill-fitting pants. You know, smoking and just like how incredibly cool this is.
Don't you kids want to be like me? It'd be like Larry from Three's Company.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, just sort of puffing away. Secondly, really, when you think about it, every marketing expert in the country, I mean, every marketing student, every advertising student, everyone, anybody who studies any of this sort of science of audience persuasion and manipulation, you really couldn't pick a better example than cigarette companies. Because, I mean, it's a thing that kills you. And then does so really slowly and painfully. And then if you're a man, by the way, your penis stops working at some point, too. And yet people are like, and it's expensive. I can't wait to buy it. Where can I get it? And it really is astounding when you think about it. It's almost like some Jedi action they've done there.
Well, I don't know how it is for other people, but speaking myself as a former smoker, the thing is, first of all, I really liked it. I enjoyed smoking. Other than the fact that, yes, it was messy. You know, I mean, you get ashes places and ashtrays are disgusting, even if you are a smoker. And it was expensive. But the thing is, I just genuinely liked it. And of course, you know, it is addictive. But the consequences are so far removed. You know, it's not a direct consequence. It's this thing of like, someday you're going to feel really crappy and maybe die a lingering death. Like, you know, 20 or 30 years from now, if you keep doing this, and you kind of feel like, yeah, okay. Well, that's 20 or 30 years from now. Yeah.
Now, see, I can get that once you started smoking, that you liked it. And I have a friend of mine, she said something that I found really made a lot of sense to me, actually. I found this very salient. She said that she was always bitching about her cigarette habit. And she was, you know, we'd be talking or something and she would have to duck outside like every 20 minutes. Or we'd have to, when you could do this, we'd have to go to a public place where you were allowed to smoke. And I said, well, you know, don't you want to quit? And she said something really interesting. She said that she didn't want to quit, but that she wished she had never started. And that was the thing. She's like, if I quit now, I'd just be miserable because the rest of my life, every single day, I'd want to be smoking. And she's like, oh, that's no way to live. But if I could go back and magically never start. So I can get that. My thing is that like there was something that to you made it desirable to start. Like it was an attractive thing to begin. Mm. And that's what I don't get. Like to me, and maybe it's because my dad was a smoker or something. But to me, it's like I just never had the urge to have the first cigarette, to have like smoke number one. It just never appealed to me. So what was the – like when you were at that point in the particular flow chart where, you know, do I try cigarette smoking? Yes. No. What was the decision maker there?
Well, I'm not sure exactly where it started the first couple of times. I think it was just like, you know, kind of being young and going, oh, this you know, this is a prop. This is a
Did you think you would look cooler and more grown up?
Probably, yeah. But the thing, what really actually started me, and I've told you this story before, I was in a sort of a rehabilitation program for an eating disorder.
That's right.
And they took away, we weren't allowed caffeine, and of course we weren't allowed to eat any sugar.
Right.
And our meals were really restricted, and we were getting like, group therapy like twice a day,
right.
And I was in a hospital treatment program, but they let you smoke because
you have to transfer your addiction onto something.
Well, yeah, and they weren't gonna tackle making people stop smoking while they were addressing these other things as well. So the thing is, you know, I would start hanging out with the smokers and smoking because it was the only vice I was allowed.
Right,
and that actually started me smoking when I was I think I was 26.
Okay, so I could see that. No, because that's a late time to begin smoking, too, because most people do. See, I was – and I guess I'd forgotten that because I was just now thinking like it was like in drama club because that's when everybody starts smoking.
No, no.
You know, it goes with the beret and the sunglasses and the Jim Morrison and the whatever. So I guess that makes a lot of sense.
And then a few years later I discovered actually it was only – then I didn't smoke for a long time. I didn't smoke for several years. And then about 3 years ago I discovered clove cigarettes. And had never actually smoked clove cigarettes before. And fell immediately in love with them. I liked the taste. Okay. I liked the smell.
That's also surprising that you had never tried clove cigarettes before. What kind of drama student were you?
I don't know. I was very anti. My parents were both heavy smokers. Mm. And I found it really distasteful when I was growing up. I really didn't like it. And so I didn't really hang out. I knew a couple of people who smoked, but most of the drama students I knew didn't smoke. And I certainly didn't want to smoke because I think it's because I grew up in the Southern California place where it was all everybody was like sort of ridiculously healthy.
Right.
So it was like the kids who smoked were like sort of the skaggy kids that we called the field rats, who would go and like hang out on the field far away from the buildings, like, you know, during breaks, so they could smoke their cigarettes and smoke pot and do poppers or whatever it is they were doing out there. And that was what, as a teenager, that's what I associated smoking with.
Guys with bad hair and bad skin and just sort of shuffling around with a subhuman's jacket on.
Yeah, it was really distasteful.
It's the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's 503-505-6964. In about 35 seconds, we're going to talk to Ms. Kelly Clark from Willamette Week. Here's the other reason I didn't start smoking, by the way, is because I think even at a relatively tender age, I could already suss out certain things about my own personality, such as the fact that I don't know if there is such a thing as like an addictive brain or an addictive person at whatever. I just know that for me, I tend to develop a lot of rituals and compulsive behaviors. So one of those is the need for caffeine. So we're going to pause for 30 seconds while I walk to the refrigerator, grab my Vizo. I'm going to come back. We're going to open it, and we're going to go to the phones and talk to Kelly Clark.
Okay.
Everybody hang on, won't you please? Awesome. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's 503-505-6964. Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show from Willamette Week Arts and Culture Editor and stylish woman around town, Ms. Kelly Clark. Hi there.
Hello, you addictive fiends. My goodness.
Seriously, it's just sometimes, do you ever get like a third-person view of yourself when you're doing something and you think, my God, what a wreck of a human I am? Probably not for you, but for me, that happens 5-6 times a day where I catch myself doing something and I go, God damn, I'm just a useless load of a person. So,
I'm like that too. Luckily, aside from the clove cigarettes, I feel Dawn. I feel her pain. They're one of the most delicious substances on the face of the planet.
I
have to stay away from them altogether.
Now, here's the thing is that my wife began in her later years. When I say later years, I mean, you know, most people, again, when they started smoking cloves, it was in high school. She did it, I think, in her early 20s when she was going through her rebelling against the church phase and whatever. But so she has, you know, she really likes those. And I think Aaron's wife, Jen, likes them quite a lot. One of the things I always heard in, in school growing up is, you know, every clove cigarette is like smoking 20 regular cigarettes, it was like some sort of a pot urban legend crossed with clove cigarettes. Here's a dumb question. I mean, do they give you like a buzz, or do they get you high in any way, or is it just the taste?
Yeah, they give you a buzz, and they taste delicious, and they make this amazing crackling sound when you suck in. That sounds like your lungs are on fire, and it's like Christmas time in an addictive, on fire package.
Christmas in your lungs.
It's like Christmas in your lungs. But I realized, though, that I actually like the smell of them more than anything. And so now I just keep a pack in my desk at home. And I've had the same pack in there for 3 years. And I just open the drawer and smell them anytime I want. I've never actually smoked them. I just like smelling them.
Does it occasionally seem like you're smoking a spiced ham or something, Dawn? I mean, it seems like, you know.
I suppose a little bit, only without the actual ham flavor.
Actually, if they made a spiced ham flavor cigarette, I would totally smoke that.
It's more like it's
that
more,
might start me smoking if there was ham flavored cigarettes.
It's more like if you were smoking a gingerbread cookie.
Wow, see, that does seem great.
Because the thing is, they actually embed the clove oil in the cigarette wrapper, but there's also sugar added to it, too. And a lot of cigarette brands add sugar. Like, somebody pointed out to me once back when I was smoking regular cigarettes, if you smoke, like, some basic generic cigarette, then you smoke a Marlboro, the Marlboros are a whole lot sweeter because they actually add sugar.
I didn't know that.
To increase the flavorfulness and the brand loyalty and the addictiveness. And there's actually sugar in the paper for the clove cigarettes. So you put one in your mouth and you can taste the sweetness on your lips before you even light it.
It's an actual candy cigarette.
Kind of.
Wow.
I mean, it's a super girl. I mean, I would say that it's a girly thing too. Like, I mean, it's kind of a girl thing. I don't know a lot of guys who smoke clove cigarettes. Maybe I'm wrong.
And again, the only guys I ever knew that smoked cloves, it was like those are the same guys that we you know, it was like you'd have your big opening and or closing night, and then you just go to Sherry's until 3 a.m. and talking about how
I take it back. I once bummed a clove cigarette off Thomas Lauderdale. So there you go.
Well, that makes perfect sense. Actually.
That is the man that should smoke clove cigarettes. I haven't had one in years, but man, they smell good.
It's just one more, you know. It's like I have so many addictions I got to manage right now, you know. It's like I got the, I got the Vizo thing, and then as an adjunct to that, in the early morning, and then on weekends I have a whole tea thing because I'm trying to,
You have a tea thing?
I do actually because I've been consuming coffee, you know, since I was in eighth grade. I started drinking coffee when I was however old you are when you're in eighth grade, 12 years old or something. And it's, you know, and it was one of those things where after however many years, I guess 20, 25 years of drinking coffee or something, it was like I woke up one day and I just got tired of the fact that it always seemed to churn my stomach up a little bit, no matter what, you know, kind or brand or whatever. And I still love coffee, but it's like I drink so much of it that I get some of that, you know, that sort of acidic feeling. And so I've tried to switch, you know, because I do drink the Vizo, but then I tried to switch to tea a little bit because I find that tea actually is a little smoother for my, because I'm just becoming old and feeble, basically. I'm falling apart.
Tea to me, I can't help it. I've tried for years. Tea is just dirty water. That's all it is.
I go with the Earl Grey, so maybe that's, you know, it's got a little more flavor to it.
I don't know. I just have a lot of trouble with tea. I try. I adore coffee above most things and most people in the world. And the idea, like, you have tea and it's just like, oh, I'm failing to have coffee right now.
Is it like
this is an opportunity where I could put coffee in my body that I have willfully chosen to put dirty water in my body instead?
Is it like seeing a really terrible cover band?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah,
That's how I feel.
A tribute to coffee.
Yeah, I mean, I wish I felt otherwise. I would love to add tea to my repertoire and be the kind of person who wasn't, you know, didn't break out in a cold sweat if I didn't get coffee in the morning. And
I like
chocolate-covered coffee beans with me if I go somewhere where I'm nervous there won't be coffee in the morning.
I like tea, but I know exactly what you're talking about, though, because tea for me is a late afternoon or an evening thing. If I run out of coffee and I need caffeine and it's first thing in the morning and all there is tea, it just makes me angry.
Probably furious.
I can't deal with it.
I find myself just hating the tea for not being coffee.
Exactly. It's like, you know, you just can't help it. You're just like, I'm sorry, but you're not coffee. I actually keep little packets of Vietnamese instant coffee in my cabinet just in case my regular coffee is not available.
You know, this has somehow become like a combination 12-step group and like the Splendid Table all at once. I don't know how that happened. Well, but it's glorious for that reason. I don't even know what I was going to say. Vietnamese coffee. Let me ask you this. So this is just the worst segue on earth. But I know that you have an actual job. So time is short for you. You have this the holiday events calendar. It's the giant holiday shopping guide, and then there's a holiday events calendar coming out in Willamette Week. And you have something. This is like made for Rick Emerson. This goes right to the core of my being. It is, quote, all the dorky yet lovable things you have to look forward to this holiday season, end quote. And that is like the definition, because I'm so gay for Christmas. I just can't possibly get enough of it. Everything that like people think of as tacky or weird or silly or you know, it's like my wife and I, one of our very, very favorite things is just to go walk around Walgreens on Belmont and like 40th after we do that Peacock Lane walk. We do Peacock every year. We do Peacock Lane and then Walgreens, because Walgreens at Christmas is just it's like some gaudy holiday version of like Wendover, Nevada. Not quite Las Vegas, you know, but it's sort of glittery in its own awful way.
They've always had the fire hazard angels and everything.
Yes.
It's just like everything's terrifying and made of weird metals. And
it's just like a whole aisle of just as seen on TV things that are specially packaged for the Christmas season. So what else is on your list of dorky, lovable things you must do?
Hands down, my favorite, Tuba Christmas. Tuba Christmas, conveniently located, as usual, at Pioneer Courthouse Square, which you can, you know, brave death at the same time as enjoying more than 100 tubas, you know, harumphing at the same time. I don't know what sound tubas make. I'm going to say harumph.
It's a that's a thing that if only I were able to park nearby and listen, but that apparently that opportunity has been closed off. So this is a thing. I mean, it's just what it sounds like, right? It's like a big band of like an orchestra of tubas or something.
Yeah, there's like 100 tubas, and I think sometimes they dress in Santa suits, but there's definitely Santa suits involved. And then they play Christmas carols and other holiday festive songs with tubas, and it like rumbles your entire stomach, and it's just crazy.
The bowel shaking majesty.
Like, I'm not making this up. Like, I've gone to Tuba Christmas before and enjoyed it quite a bit. Kind of awesome. I don't really care about going to the tree lighting, but Tuba Christmas, I mean, it's Christmas, but with tubas.
Christmas plus. How many of these guys do they get? B, from where do they come from? From where do they come? And then C, how long have they been doing this?
I know they've been doing it for at least the last 5 years. I don't have anything prepared on this. I only have one line about Tuba Christmas in the holiday events calendar. But from my vast knowledge, I know that there are at least around 75 tubas. They come from all over. They come from high school bands. They come from community bands. They come from, I believe, even maybe some of the brass bands around town. You know, the One More Time Around band, all those kind of people will do it. And, it is very magical. Nothing says Christmas like the low, you know, rumbling of a tuba.
I can only assume, since there's so many of them, if you are like local to the area and you play the tuba, you must be welcome in Tuba Christmas.
Well, it's
oh,
like
sure. In fact, I'm pretty sure they'd shame you if you didn't do Tuba Christmas. I think it
must be a little bit like it's like the musical equivalent of being a furry. You know, I think it's a necessarily it's a finite group of people, and so I think your circle of social contacts must, by definition, you know, it's kind of the same nine guys at every convention. I think we had to do our own. We had to have like a piccolo Christmas or something, or a what's the funniest instrument that's not the kazoo?
The ukulele.
The ukulele Christmas. There you go. That's exactly
ukulele Christmas. Okay. That's pretty hipster.
I was going to say that's a little hipster. No, but that's the thing. You could totally. That's exactly the sort of thing that would make money in this town, right? All you have to do is like wear a jacket with patches on the elbows, you know, and then you just, you know, and don't shave for a while, and it's a ukulele Christmas, and then but charge like $70 to attend it, and people would absolutely do that. Are you kidding me? In Portland, come on. So there's Tuba Christmas, and then do you go to? I may be wrong about this. I thought you live sort of in Southeast, right?
I have lived in Southeast, yes.
Do you go to Peacock Lane? Do you go to the place on Belmont and like 40th or whatever?
Of course I go. Of course I go to Peacock Lane. I go to Peacock Lane every single year.
It doesn't
matter what quadrant of the city I happen to live in. I make a pilgrimage to Peacock Lane every year.
The
only difference is deciding whether we're going to do a drive-through or we're going to do a walk-through. That's the only way we really switch it up. That's like really the only change.
I got to tell you, that place is just, and the thing about that street is that it changes just enough every year so that you kind of see, you know, so you don't see exactly the same thing. It changes a little bit,
sure.
But like 85% of the houses, I think, it's like the same owners or maybe just the same decorations or whatever, but it's, you know, it's the combination of tradition and then the new, because there's always somebody who's decided to augment it just a little bit. It's
My two favorites are the Peanut House, where it has Snoopy and he's gliding on the ice lake.
Right.
In the front yard. And my other favorite is the Grinch, definitely.
Okay.
There's a Grinch that is so old that he has been bleached over the years. He used to be like a sort of like a pea green, and now he's like a light sort of, you know, sort of like ferny color, because it's just the people have been there for so long that the actual cutout of the Grinch has been bleached to almost black and white.
All right, now, awesome. I don't know, Dawn, who was it that was here last week and I was bitching about the Grinch and how, was it?
You were bitching about the Grinch?
Well, just now, hear me out. Was it like when Jim Willig was here?
Yeah, I think maybe, yeah.
It was last week we were talking about Christmas and I was like, oh my God, Peacock Lane, I can't get enough of it. And I'm like a rolling Simon Cowell just going down that street and just like passing judgment on, you know, excoriating houses that I feel are unworthy. But I was making this point last week that maybe now it sounds as though I have to withdraw my criticism because I've been going there, you know, Lauren and I've been going there for, I don't know, these 5-6 years. And I actually said, and there's this one house where they've gone to the trouble of putting up this Grinch display. And what color is the Grinch? And Jim said, he's green. And I said, that's right, except this house, he's white. What kind of a goddamn, you know, bit of nonsense is that? It's a white Grinch. Oh. It makes me sick. And I was all angry about it.
Well, first of all, it has faded. And second of all, in the original book, it's actually in black, white, and red. So the Grinch isn't green.
Is that true?
The Grinch isn't green in The Grinch Who Stole Christmas. In the Dr. Seuss classic book, he is white because it's mostly black and white with splashes of red. It's not until you get to the cartoon with the Boris Karloff voice that he magically turns green.
Really?
So really, you're safe on either, yes, you're safe with either a white Grinch or a green Grinch. But I will have you know that the Grinch that I'm pretty sure that the Grinch that's on Peacock Lane used to be green and has now faded to a, you know, sage color.
Okay, seriously.
Sage-ish, whitish.
I need to go to that guy's house now and just knock on the door and apologize. Every year, because seriously, for like the last...
That won't be weird.
The last 5 years, people have been like, and there's some guy over there and he's shaking his fist and angrily shouting at the house about the Grinch. Because if it is, as you said, the Grinch is black and white and splashes of red in the book, then not only is it acceptable, it sounds like it probably is accurate. And so basically what it comes down to, as it so often does, is that I, Rick Emerson, am an ass. So that's...
Yeah,
but I mean, it's, you know... But again, it's one of those moments where I get a third-person view of myself. I go, God, what a dick I am.
Well, all right. I will bring you the book so you can confirm it for yourself.
I have not seen the cover of The New Willamette, but I'm assuming that it's like all, you know, near-bombing all the time?
Actually, no. Well, we've got another big story that's actually... I think it's fascinating. It's focusing on sexting, which you may have heard about even at your advanced age.
Thank you.
Thing that kids do. But basically what we found out is that if you're a teenager and you take dirty photos on your cell phone and the cops find out about it, you can be arrested as a child and charged with child pornography.
You can be a sex offender. You can be labeled a sex offender.
You can be a sex offender. And so Beth Slovic, one of our news reporters, did a really amazing story focusing on a 20-year-old woman who took dirty pictures of her 17-year-old girlfriend. And the couple had been together for a while, pictures of them kissing. Apparently there's some pictures with some dirty nakedness on it. And one of the younger girl's mom found the phone, was very against her having a relationship with a woman, and turned it into the cops. And Washington County prosecuted the 20-year-old, stuck her in jail for 5 weeks because she couldn't make bail, and she pled down. She's not officially, she's not on the sex offender registry, but she lost her job. She's paying all this money. Her life has just been totally just turned upside down by this. And, yeah, they were together. It was... pictures of them kissing, pictures of them doing things that you probably should not take pictures of on your phone, but definitely not anything where, by any stretch of the imagination, would you say this is child pornography. And it's purely because the laws that are on the books were written, you know, in the Reagan era, and they were written for great idea. You know, these are sex offender laws, these are child pornography laws that were strengthened in the 1980s before people ever had cell phones, and they've never.
Right.
Revise the laws. And so it's up to every district attorney to decide whether he's going to prosecute. And most of the district attorneys in Oregon, when they get the teenage ones, they're just like, hey, kids, don't do this, and they don't prosecute. But apparently Washington County has been pretty vigilant about basically trashing teenagers' lives.
So, that sucks. I mean, that's terrible.
So,
I mean, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this is a story. I hope people get a chance to read it. You know, obviously the Muhammad alleged bomb plot is a huge story. But if you have time, read Sex Crimes, because, well, first of all, it's about sexting and it's crazy. So, you know, it's interesting. But, this is awful. I mean, this is something that we're hoping that they'll take up in the legislature and they'll be able to change these laws, because it is, I mean, come on, it's teenagers. Like, I don't care what era you are, what century you are, if there is an ability to take a picture, you know, of your private parts and you're 14, I can't imagine that it's not going to happen.
Oh, God, I got to tell you, I mean, as much as I'm not like one of those like things were better when I was a kid guys, I got to tell you, teenage boys especially have this, they have a real tendency to do horrible things to other teenage boys, often involving penises.
If
one guy falls asleep too early at a slumber party and somebody's got a Polaroid. So I just thank God that there were no like cell phones at that point, because that picture of like, you know, that picture of Ted passed out, you know, at 2 a.m. and then suddenly everybody decides to, hey, I got an idea. You drop your pants. I'll get the camera. And then you position him at, you know, and it's like that'd be halfway around the school, you know, 10 minutes later.
Yeah, it was bad enough when it just meant that you were going to be ridiculed by your classmates. But now you could actually be arrested and thrown in jail. And you don't have to be of age. You don't have to be over 18. If you are distributing child pornography and you're under the age of 18, you still can be arrested for it.
Wow.
And what's really weird is that if you have sex, it's not necessarily as bad, because if you're also underage, so like if you're 19 and your boyfriend or girlfriend is 17 and there's only 2 years between you, there's only a 2-year age difference, and you have sex, you're free and clear. But if you take a picture of you doing something sexual, then you're a child pornographer, which makes complete sense.
This country is just totally effed in many yeah. ways. Just from one day to the next, I can never figure out how things work. The new issue of Willamette Week On stands now. Kelly Clark, reader in print, Willamette Week, or online at WWeek.com. Have a fantastic rest of the week, weekend. We will talk to you very soon, Kelly.
Thanks.
There you go. That's Kelly Clark, ladies and gentlefolk, from the fine paper Willamette Week. There you go. That is Willamette Week or WWeek.com. That's where you can find out more about that. Today's Rick Emerson program, which, by the way, is just a fantabulous slice of entertainment that really is the it's one of the hallmarks of our fine nation as we step into the 21st century, that you can take this program with you. You can get it 24 hours a day via RickEmerson.com, the live stream. You can also get it on your mobile device. By the way, I don't have time to talk about this all now. I keep meaning to get like a sort of, you know, what do you call it? Like a tutorial or whatever those videos are online that like show you how to do stuff, like a walkthrough or something. Because, you know, if you get, I'm just saying, if you have an iPhone or a BlackBerry, actually, you know, getting this program now is fairly simple. You did it because I have an iPhone 4, you have the 3GS, and you actually were able to get the show like that.
Yeah.
I mean, it did like one step where it said like, do you wish to use the default player instead? And you said like, yes. And then it just began playing. So, just as a side note, if you are an iPhone user or I think a BlackBerry user, maybe some issues with that new torch we've heard about. But if you're a...
What about on Bloggy?
If you have a Bloggy, you should just wait for the next turn of the karmic wheel and try to come back as somebody smarter. But if... We should totally get a Bloggy app. That should be the only app we offer. If you have an iPhone, it actually is pretty easy to get this program now. Even you know, you do the live stream, for, you know, via Live 365, or you know, you can get stream the archives, all that. You should go to RickEmerson.com. The stream is up 24 hours a day. You can also download all this stuff. It's on iTunes. I mean, it really is just it's an astonishing age in which we live. And this program is made possible by a series of fine business partners such as Squires Electric. Find out more about them by going to Squires Electric. SquiresElectric.com, because technology is glorious. It's also a little confusing sometimes. And even if you're a smart guy, sometimes you know just you don't have time to deal with electricity, or you just you know, maybe that's not where your particular expertise lies. Maybe you're a guy who can fix garbage disposals. And by the way, if you are, I really could use your assistance because mine is effed at the moment. So you know, I'm just saying. But you might not know how to deal with what Scatman Crothers called electricity. So you find out more about Squires Electric by going to SquiresElectric.com. Squires Electric. .com, or you can call them at 503-252-1609. 503-252-1609. Free estimates, no job too small, too large. They do any kind of wiring, whether it's Ethernet wiring, office intercoms, electrical wiring, whether it's remodeling or updating the system in an old home, whether you've moved into a place, you want to make sure that it works, you're expanding your business, whatever, it doesn't matter. If it's something you you know, haven't really thought about, but you want to make sure that it works, or it's just started acting a little strange, you know, don't wait. You know, if you need it maintained or fixed, you deal with that now. It's 503-252-1609, SquiresElectric.com. It's 503-252-1609 or SquiresElectric.com. Squires Electric, they are a proud sponsor of the Rick Emerson radio program. Straight ahead, we've got your greatest songs ever made. Coming up later on, we'll do the top five David Bowie songs. Now, is it... Now, do you... Just real quickly, do you... About these David Bowie songs we're going to get to. Now, are these... Is this subjective or objective? Like, are these, you know, like, you know, you were talking to your friend about this. Are these, like, your favorite? Or is this, like, if you were to take someone who had never heard Bowie and you were to say, this is your overview?
I think that's more like that, because I know there are a couple of, a few of songs that are my favorites that are not on here. I don't know where Bobby stands as far as these being his favorites. He's the one who came up with the list. But I do think it is a good starting place as far as just saying, here, listen to this and... And do you hear that in this?
All right, okay.
Listen how awesome this is, kind of a thing.
So it is it's a representative sampling.
Yeah, pretty much.
Excellent. Is this Bobby that I met at your party?
Yes.
All right. Bobby or Rob or Robert or Robbie or like nine different names?
Bobby or Robert, but rarely Bob.
Excellent. So there you go. So we'll get to that. Also, Penis Watch, Corpse Watch, Hick Watch. Try to get to as many of these things as possible. You are listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
I'm Rick Emerson, and these are the greatest songs ever made. Hearing a song for the first time is a bit of a double-edged sword. Giddy anticipation and excitement can often lead to unrealistic expectations. The thrill of the new can be stunningly similar to confusion or uncertainty. Even the most finely crafted songs can sometimes require a few exposures before the melody or the hook or the lyrics truly resonate with the listener. The first couple of listens serving only to remove the figurative wrapping paper, if you will. We've all had the experience of hearing a band unveil a new song or a new album, sometimes live, where they'll play a new track from an upcoming record not yet released, or maybe a listening event or a release party, and not being sure whether we like the song, sometimes a song we grow to love. It's just too new to process. Add to that the possibility that a band has been written off, or worse, that they've committed an egregious error by replacing a seemingly crucial member. One need only to remember the rancor surrounding the replacement of David Lee Roth by Sammy Hagar to know that this sort of thing is hardly the recipe for guaranteed success. Really, all things considered, the first song on a new album, an album featuring the debut of someone who is preemptively considered a lackluster replacement, well, that song should be a disaster. Sometimes things don't turn out as expected. It's important to remember that the song you're going to hear today was released before the internet, before file sharing, and to some degree, before mass media as we now know it. There were no leaks, there were no illicit uploads, there were no advanced bootlegs. No one had heard anything, and the expectations were high, impossibly high, it seemed. And the band delivered, and then some. The song and the album begin with the sound of a tolling bell, a wordless salute and farewell to their fallen comrade, their former lead singer, who had died of, yes, let's all say it together, choking on vomit the previous year. And then, like flicks of lightning on the horizon, tracer notes began emerging from the darkness. Dark, deep, menacing, glorious notes. The song's tempo soon kicks up a notch, and just when it seems that the lyrics are imminent, your chance to finally hear the replacement voice, it doesn't happen. The song settles instead into sort of a mid-speed groove, making listeners wait. One can imagine an entire army of fans, an entire generation of rock listeners, hunched over their turntables, or listening to car radios, or headphones on in their basements, wondering what the new singer could possibly sound like. What could he do to live up to expectations? How could the song ever succeed? And remember as well, these listeners were skeptical, but at the same time, they were fans. They wanted the song to work. They wanted their heroes to come back from the brink. And then, just when you can bear the weight no longer, the new voice arrives in the song, carrying echoes of the previous singer, but making the sound all his own just the same. The song was good, better than good. The song was near perfect. The song and the band succeeded and were saved forevermore. So put yourself back in that time. When you didn't know what it was going to sound like, you had no standard, you had no real expectations, you just didn't know how it could possibly succeed, or what it would sound like if it did. One of the greatest songs ever made. This is AC/DC and Hell's Bells on The Rick Emerson Show on the Emerson News Network.
Thank you.
worst musical segue ever. You're listening to the Rick Emerson radio program. How fantastic is that? The answer is it's unbelievably fantastic. Castalia Language Center helps to make this fine show possible every day. Find out more about them by going to PortlandSpanish.com. That is PortlandSpanish.com. And by the way, don't think the last hour I don't realize that I missed the opportunity to tie that into the Ocho Cinco guy. I'm fully aware of my failure in that regard. I have shamed myself.
You make me so sad sometimes.
I know. Don't deserve to live. You can find out more about the Castalia Language Center by going to PortlandSpanish.com. Clara Gravel is the owner and operator of Castalia, and she offers Spanish language classes for adults. So once you get to be, 18, 19, 20, 21, 25, 30, and beyond, you know, your brain just starts operating a little bit differently because your brain, understandably so, just starts to sort of shut down things that it thinks it's not going to use anymore, like the ability to learn a language from scratch because, you're born, you're learning the one language. You know, your brain doesn't know any better. It doesn't know that you're going to be trying to be multilingual or trilingual later on. So as a result, you just learn a bit differently the older you get. Which is why sometimes people will try to learn a language the same way that they try to teach it to you in high school, which is itself, by the way, not tremendously effective because you're just memorizing a bunch of crap and reciting it and you're not learning it in context. So this is better for you in like 50 different ways. And if you have a busy schedule, you got a job, family, kids, whatever, sometimes multiple jobs, you then can find something that works with your schedule, that day of the week and a time of day that works best for you. And whatever your level of currently existing language skill is, and I can find something that functions with that, that meshes with. What are you doing over there?
I got the cord for my headphones wrapped around my ankle.
Right, is it around the really around your ankle? Not even around the table leg?
No, it's really long, and apparently I stepped through a loop, and it ended up wrapping around my ankle.
It's one of those things where the headphone cable like has a mind of its own. It's like a cat, right? It's stalking you.
And then I have like these rubberized soles and on my shoes, and it's a rubberized cable, so it was sticking to my shoe, and it wouldn't slide off.
What is the point of having the headphone cable be rubberized on the outside?
I don't know.
Because it just makes the thing stick against itself so you can never untangle it.
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense. Well, whatever. Anyway, so PortlandSpanish.com is the website for Castalia Language Center. You can find out more about them at PortlandSpanish.com. Please tell me you heard it here, won't you please? That's PortlandSpanish.com, a proud sponsor of this, the Rick Emerson Radio Program. By the way, so I have you to thank for that greatest songs ever made because you'd put AC/DC on your top five last Friday. And mm-hmm. I got to think about how goddamn awesome that Back in Black album is.
I'm glad I could help.
It's just one of the best things ever. I mean, it really is just, it's just jaw-droppingly good. By the way, Ali Walker was apparently on Profiler, which I never watched.
Yeah, I got that. Profiler, yeah.
Is it still on?
I don't think so.
It's not like the, it's like the closer, like one of those shows that exists and I have no idea whether it's still airing or not.
Mm. I think The Closer is still on. I watched The Closer as reliably as, what am I, religiously as I could the first few seasons, but it's on TNT, so they do this thing where it's like, it's on, then it's not, and then it's on, and then, oh, it's a basketball game, and then it's on, no, and then it's going away for 6 months, and wait, now it's back, but we didn't tell you, and, you know, so.
Yeah, that's what's her name, Kyra Sedgwick, right?
Yeah. It's actually a really good show.
Let me ask you this about Kyra Sedgwick. In your opinion, can she act?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Maybe I've seen her in the wrong things.
I've seen her in a few films that she was very, very good in. But the thing is, she's done an awful lot of mainstream stuff that didn't really challenge her at all.
Have you seen that movie she did with Helen Mirren? It's called, Saving Grace? Chasing Grace?
Oh,
Saving
I know.
Chase?
I know what you're talking about.
Giving
no,
Chase?
No, I haven't seen that.
It's just terrible. It's one of the worst things I've ever seen. And it's like, because it has Helen Mirren, you feel like you're supposed to like it. Like you're supposed to nod sagely and go, no, it speaks of the eternal truths.
I can't remember the name of it, but Kyra Sedgwick made this movie. She made this movie a couple of years ago. It was a little indie movie about this woman who is like sort of just freakishly, creepily, unnaturally attached to her child. And, I mean, just like an overprotective mother to the point of being just sort of disturbing mm-hmm. and creepy. And she was really good in it, but it was just one of those movies that just made you feel like you needed to take a shower afterwards.
Feel oogie inside.
Yeah.
You're listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program. This is Don Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Don Taylor.
I'm terribly excited to bring you, Rick Emerson, this hick watch
really?
Today. Oh, yes.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, here is your hick watch for Wednesday on the Rick Emerson Radio Program.
Copenhagen makes me feel so good. Copenhagen, the way I know it should. Well, I put a little chew in my mouth, go spitting, slobbering all around the house. Copenhagen.
Here is your Hick Watch for Wednesday.
Two women were arrested for shoplifting, and Edmond, Oklahoma police say they used their bodies to conceal the goods. Edmond police authorities say it was at the Edmond TJ Maxx store that loss prevention officers found the two women stuffing items under their belly fat and breasts.
Oh no. See, you knew. Here's why I hate you. Let me just tell you, this is why I despise you and everything about you, Don. This is why you're a horrible human being. Because you knew exactly what everybody was thinking of when you said, like, hiding items on their body. You knew that it was like a red herring. You knew that we were thinking one thing. We were not thinking they stored things under their belly fat. God damn. That's cruel.
They say the two...
Jesus.
Now here, wait.
Uh-huh.
They took 4 pairs of boots, 3 pairs of jeans, a wallet, and gloves. $2,600 worth of store merchandise.
And they hid it under their rolls.
Yes.
Jesus God.
Aileen Brown, 28, and 37-year-old Schmecko Thomas.
Schmecko Thomas. Hey, kids, I'm Schmecko Thomas.
Were arrested for shoplifting and are facing felony charges. Officer James Hamm said these two were actually concealing them in areas of their body where excess skin was, under their chest area and armpits.
See, he's trying to be so diplomatic about it. A place where excess skin... When you say it's a place of excess skin, it's like a tumor or something, or like a little tag you got to get removed. That's okay. Excess skin. He's not just saying, like, they're so huge that they're storing it in between the rolls of their corpulence.
Yep. He said God. Brown also had a knife in her purse that they used to cut security tags in the store. And I tell you, you read a story like this, and it's like, okay, you think, wow, you know, They stuffed some items under their belly fat. And you're thinking, they stole a couple of tubes of lipstick.
A candy bar.
A candy bar. No, 4 pairs of boots, 3 pairs of jeans, a wallet, and gloves.
God damn. Please tell me there are photographs.
No, I did not have a photograph, sadly.
Oh, wow. That's, you know, and imagine being the guy who, like, first of all, how were they found out? I mean.
The store security at TJ Maxx apparently saw them.
Oh, they saw them place the things
into their.
Imagine me and the guy going,
something.
Ma'am, I'm going to need you to...
Oh, I know.
I'm going to need to open your fleshy clam-like rolls.
I'm going to need to look under there.
And just sort of a horrible, like, open sesame kind of a thing.
Yeah.
Just sort of I mean, what if they just said, like, no? I mean, because then a guy would have had to go, all right. And then it's just, you know what it is? Then it's like reaching into warm bread dough.
Now, I will say this. I am fat. I'm not making any bones about that. I'm not chubby. I am not like rotund. Well, I am chubby and rotund, but I am fat. I am a fat person, and I'm okay with that word. I think that's a word that we, the fat people, need to take back and embrace. I am a fat person. There is nowhere on my body I could hide 1 pair of boots.
A pair of boots?
Much less 2 pairs of boots and a couple of pairs of jeans and a wallet.
God damn.
Dear God.
I mean, it's not like
I couldn't hide 1 boot.
They were not. I mean, it's like they're not like they're Barbie boots either, or, you know, I mean, they're boot boots.
Yeah.
Jesus. And I mean, and I wonder if this is so horrifying. How did they come up with this? Like, did they accidentally loot? Have you seen the remote? And then it's like, you know, and then one of them went, well, look at that. And then reach it and like pulled it out and went, wait a minute. I wonder. And then you cut to like an hour later when one of them is standing in the living room and the other one has got like a folding chair inside and going, well, you can keep anything in there. What if? And then it just cuts to them at the store.
I need a new pair of jeans. You know, I could just... Oh, God.
By the way, can I just tell you this? Like, it's the greatest response. It says, this is like... every other word is in all caps. This story is gold. Ham arrests 2 fat people for hiding clothes in their rolls. And then in all caps, I love this story. Ham arrests 2 fat people for hiding things in their rolls. God damn. I mean,
only thing that would have made the story better if instead of TJ Maxx, they were stealing from Walmart.
Yes. And I mean, it's like, well, the thing is, this probably happens at Walmart, but maybe, I mean, you got to wonder how often does this happen and it's just not caught or detected?
I know.
Because you think you look in a guy's pocket or if he's like, you know, like his, like, you know, like a purse is bulging or something. But this sounds like the whole person is bulging, like when they walk into the joint. God.
And how are you going to know what's them and what's boots jammed under their stomach?
Well, it's like we've all done the thing of like, I mean, I haven't done this, but we've all seen, you know, so when are you expecting? You know, and it's like they're not expecting anything except more lunch later. And it's like you just, you know, and so with this, it's, you know, I think people are a little, they're a little sketchy about asking because it's like you can't go like, are you smuggling a television? And, you know, then they go, no, I'm shaped this way. And then, you know, and then it's embarrassing. So it must have been egregious for the guard to just think like, I wonder if the guard actually pondered letting them go. If he was, it's not worth it.
They started with small items and they just kept pushing it to see how much they could get away with. Like, you know, I stole a pack
of Rolos,
a Mars bar, you know, and it was in my armpit. And, well, yeah, I stole a pair of socks and I stuck it under my belly fat. Yeah, I stole a pair of pants.
It's like a name that tune sort of like I can fit 5 boots within my folds. Like, if you're some minimum wage guy with a gun and you're just watching these huge women just shove things into their folds and realizing you're going to have to be like fishing around in there.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you must just go like, I don't know, do I need the health care that badly? I mean, it's like I should just let him go, you know. But then it's like, but then if you're seeing them or if it's on camera, like you have to confront them about it. And I wonder if they were like doing... Like there's this great book called Loaded Dice by a guy named John Soares, and it's about some guys who, I don't know if it's a true story or not, but he claims it's a true story. But these guys in the '60s who cheated casinos in the early days of cheating craps tables.
Is that the book they based that horrible movie 21?
No. This is much earlier. Oh, okay. This is in the '60s.
Oh, okay.
And you know who knows? It could be equally false, but it was a long time ago, so there's a greater likelihood maybe that it's true. But they did this. They had this whole thing about the craps table, where they would have loaded dice, literally, that, you know, they were slightly weighted at one end with a clear polymer to make to favor certain rolls. But the deal is, and it sounds very plausible actually, because the deal is that the guy would go to the table and he would palm a few dice that were duplicates of the casino dice, and then at some point he would reach down, shake the dice in both hands,
mm-hmm.
but he was really palming one set and then putting the other set back into play. And he said that like they would actually practice at home for days and weeks palming like 5 dice at a time or something. And so it makes you wonder if like they were doing this with like, you know,
cantaloupes.
Yeah, like a, you know, yeah. Yeah, or just, you know, like teddy bears or whatever it is they were going to be stealing, you know, bottles of Purell. Just sort of, you know, and just, you know. And
can
then
you see it?
Okay.
I don't know. It's a little bit bulgy on the side. Got to have to work on that
clench
one.
Clench harder, you know, and then or just sort of like.
Maybe
you know,
a no on the PlayStation.
Figuring out how to position everything, you know, you know, and it's like, does it go in vertically or horizontally? Oh, God. And then, I mean, and then just, you know, and then just, God damn. And the parade of horrors just never ends. Imagine then you're in the car, then you're home, and then imagining just getting home, and then you're like some sort of fleshy slot machine where you're just going, all right, let's unload. And you pull up your shirt and blah, and you just sort of, you know, like the River Ganges, just the booty flows forth.
And you're their kids. And everything they bring home from the store smells like sweat.
It smells like, why does it smell like the inside of Aunt Marge?
Why are my new boots so yeasty?
Oh, God, this is the worst thing I've ever heard. I mean, it's the best story ever, though. Well done. You're fantastic. Okay, I don't even know where we go from there. All right, that's your Hick Watch for Christ almighty. Wednesday. Horrified. Well, I put a little chew in my mouth, go spitting, slobbering all around the house. That Copenhagen makes me feel so good. How about you? You're an awful human being. I just don't even know. Hey, this is just going to be with me for the rest of the day.
Remember when you said you wanted to work with me because I got the show?
That's the thing is, you really do. In ways both. I mean, how sad is that, too? You know exactly what Rick likes. Stories of women hiding things in their folds. That's exactly the sort of thing makes my heart go pitter-patter. Christ. All right, here's Don Taylor at the news desk. I don't even know what we do after. I don't know where to go.
I have no idea. Here,
I'm a changed human being now.
20-year-old Alex Lee Baker of Clarksville, Tennessee, was charged with making 3 bogus phone calls to 911 on Sunday during a 35-minute stretch.
Alex Lee Baker, you quit calling 911.
Yeah. The first call, he claimed to be a witness to a murder. The second, he claimed he'd been stabbed. And the third, he said a woman had been killed and buried. Police in Tennessee say Baker told him, later after they arrested him, he was bored and anxious because he had not smoked a cigarette in 2 days. Police said Monday that all the calls originated from a phone owned by Baker, who remained jailed on $15,000 bond.
Okay, there you go. It's 503-505-6964. 503-505-6964. Hey, by the way, just a technical question about these Bowie songs. Is this an audio CD you give me, or are these MP3s?
I don't know. I never actually looked at it. My DVD ROM player died like just a couple of days ago and will not function, so I just brought the disc straight from him to you.
Okay, I believe these are okay, so I'm gonna have to I'll have to figure this out. I'll puzzle through this at some point. You're listening to here's the thing, very rarely do I say this. I just feel like I'm totally at loose ends now. I feel like it's like I don't even know what I'm doing or just how to proceed with anything. I feel like I've just been so altered. Oh my God! So Cheryl just sent a video about the woman, about the women who were shoplifting.
Oh really?
And then she says the woman on the right has the very best mugshot. So let me just let's see here if I can find. Let me see if I can open this. I'll send you the link here in just a second. Okay. I'm just gonna reduce this. Let me just take one more moment to. The Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us today. And isn't it a glorious day to be alive? I'll tell you what. Well, let's do this. Let's take a small break. We'll come back on the other side. We'll get to the top five here shortly. We got your unbelievably. We haven't even gotten to the corpse watch.
Well, we could.
What time? You have to do a top ham-fisted radio today, though, don't
I
you?
I do.
To do ham-fisted radio.
You know, I don't have to actually leave the studio for 40 minutes, though.
So I'll tell you what. We'll take a little break here. We're just going to reset ourselves mentally. Ready to come back. Straight ahead, we got your penis watch, corpse watch. We'll rustle up. And really, it's also so we can rustle up the mugshots of these ladies, because we're all going to suffer together on this.
Oh, yes.
This isn't going to be like a – this is going to be a thing where it's you know, you're going to be excluded from the pain. You're going to get a full dose of that. So we'll do that on the other side. Also, the top five David Bowie songs of all time. What is coming up on Ham-Fisted Radio today, which people can hear at Cascadia.fm at 4 p.m.?
I'm not really sure. As per usual, we will mostly just be yakking about ourselves, Bobby Fatboy Roberts and I. I know that we'll be discussing Thanksgiving a bit, and we had a request from a listener to talk about our biggest Thanksgiving disasters, so we'll probably be talking about past Thanksgiving horrors as
Fantastic.
Well.
Fantastic. By the way, just speaking of, so Sons of Anarchy is done for the season, and I can't stress again how great last night's episode was. So Sons of Anarchy is wrapped for the third season. I think Boardwalk Empire's got one more.
Yeah, one more.
Walking Dead has. So next Sunday is it, because I think Dexter's only got one more.
Yeah.
And by the way,
what will we do with ourselves?
Well, for one thing, I'm going to be done watching Dexter. Sarah tried to pawn this yesterday. She's like, "Have you seen Dexter?" And Greg and I both kind of went, ugh, and we stifled, because we're both doing the same thing of like playing out the thread just to get to the end. And then we're both, you know, pulling the ripcord on. But she was like peddling this fiction of like, "Oh my God, I know it's been a little lackluster, but it becomes great." That's a lie. It doesn't become great. What happened? Just FYI, like, spoiler. So Dexter, like, you know, so Julia Stiles, who's, you know, his protege, she kills a guy, and then they have to, like, F it out right afterward. So
really?
It's like, and the thing is, can I just tell you this? Maybe it's because I'm a guy, but I don't find Michael C. Hall. Maybe it's Dexter that I don't find sexy. I don't find Michael C. Hall. He's an attractive man. He's a good-looking guy. He seems like a nice guy. I don't find him sexy at all. There's no sexual vibe to him.
No.
He doesn't seem like a guy that has the sexual vibe.
And honestly, one of the things that I liked the most about him, you know, early in the series was that he was not a sexual person.
He was a sexless person entirely, yeah.
And so that's why his relationship with Darla was great. Because,
right.
Because she didn't seem particularly interested in it either.
Because she'd had the abusive husband.
Right.
So she didn't want sex, and he was a sociopath and didn't have any emotion. So
yeah.
It worked. Like, and
now suddenly he's all hot to trot. Because he killed somebody?
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's like, and I liked the whole thing, too, of him and Rita having the weird relationship where she, like, yeah, had the rapey husband, so she didn't like sex, and he was, like, pretending to be sort of human, but he's really, I'm really a monster. I'm empty like a donut box, or whatever the hell he says. I like that not because it's, like, You know, not because it's like, you know, just because it's interesting. Like, it's not like, you know, I found it like some weird turn on or something that, you know, like, oh, he's with the abused chick. It's hot. It's just that it was different. It was like a thing you didn't see played out on television. But then, as we've noted many times before, Dexter just became like every show on TV, where it's like, you know, parent trying to deal with their quirky kids and his strange life, and he's juggling life and career, you know, and then also like he kills a guy every now and again. So, yeah, Julia Stiles kills a guy. And then, yeah, and then I swear to God, it's like the show just seems like a self-parody. They stab the guy together, you know, with like both, like all of their hands. It's like that bad scene in Ghost, like all of their hands wrapped around the blade together, like they're sculpting. And then as soon as they stab the guy and he's all like gurgling, and then as he's gurgling, it's like they look up and their eyes meet. And it's like, it was, there was just like everything but like sweeping, like orchestra, like, you know, like running across the plains to embrace the arms of your lover in Oklahoma music.
Every time you talk about the show, I am so glad I don't watch it anymore.
So I got to tell you, next Sunday is done. We're going to wrap up Walking Dead. We'll wrap up Boardwalk Empire and Dexter. And I'm going to be done with one of those shows.
I did want to say something really quick. I had given up on Glee this season because, as I said, it's just gotten really precious and really predictable, and them jamming as many songs in as they could, and the writing had just really suffered. And I sort of begrudgingly kind of got drawn back into it the last couple of weeks.
Did somebody convince you to watch it?
There was a plot. So I had heard tell of a sort of a plot line that I found intriguing, so I wanted to watch it. It was about the gay character being bullied by a football player who actually, like, you know, has sort of barely hidden hostile homosexual feelings for him. And it seemed really interesting. I started back, I watched the last two or three episodes, and it seems like the show actually found its footing and got better again. And the big change, I noticed the two big changes were not as many songs.
Right.
So they weren't jamming as much music. And Ryan Murphy back writing the actual scripts.
Do you suppose that was because, like, somebody noticed that the show was, I mean, it's hard to say failing because, you know, it continues to get great ratings, but do you suppose somebody somewhere, or maybe even he himself, just said, like, ooh, things are starting to go off the rails?
I don't know, maybe, because it actually, the writing just suddenly tightened up and got sharper. It didn't just, it was, for almost the entire season, it just focused, it relied so heavily on the kids bursting into song, like, every 5 minutes, and Jane Lynch walking in and saying something snarky for humor benefit. And the last couple of episodes, Jane Lynch's character took a right turn into something far more complex and much better. The actual dialogue has gotten tighter and better, and there aren't as many songs.
Well, maybe who knows? I mean, maybe they've pulled off the rarest trick of all, which is recognizing when the show starts to go bad and fixing it.
Maybe.
Because, I mean, that never happens, right?
It certainly wasn't hurting their numbers that the show sucked. But but on the other hand, though, there were a lot of people, like, on the internets talking about, you know, along with this huge rabid fan base, there were a lot of people just going, what the hell happened?
Right. So, well, that's the thing that is the most painful, when the show transmogrifies into a different show altogether, when it turns into something else. And then you've got, it's sad, because then you've got early fans, and it's not like being an early fan is better than being a late fan. I mean, it's like, you know, I'm not that pretentious, but it's like, you know, but you've got early fans who go, well, what happened to my show? And then you've got latecomers to the show who are like, well, this is really, really great, but they have never seen and don't appreciate the earlier version of the show before it changed.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe he's, maybe they're going to try to stop that from happening. Maybe they're going to try to reverse the slide and try to satisfy everybody by not having the whole thing just be some money-minting machine by dint of how many songs they can cram
in. I wonder also if he had some other projects going on and he personally sort of stepped away from it.
Like Abrams?
The bulk of season two, the beginning of season two, because he seems much more hands-on and involved now. He's actually writing the scripts again. And there was some press release, like, today, I think, or yesterday, where he said in an interview that that in 2012, there's definitely going to be some firings of some of the actors because he doesn't want to have one of those shows where everyone continues to be in high school into their 30s.
Right.
So,
and speaking of which, just real quickly on that note, I know that you and Bobby will probably talk about this today on Hamfisted Radio. And I have no idea what this means or if it means anything, but, you know, like, Darabont fired the whole staff of Walking Dead.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
He fired the writing staff. And they're saying that may not be – I mean, it's bad for people who got fired, but they're saying it may not be a bad indication of the show because it already got picked up for the second season. He is saying that the reason is – he didn't say the reason he got rid of the writing staff. He didn't say why, but what he did say is that he's going to the Torchwood model, which is where everything he doesn't write himself, he will freelance. He'll have freelance writers do it, as opposed to having a writing staff, as opposed to having a staff team.
Yeah, a writer's room of guys who throw ideas around and write by committee.
So it's like him, because the way it was like him and this guy, whose name I forget, who was like his second command, and then there was, and then there was like five or six people who everything got filtered through, or who that wrote all the scripts from his ideas. And I guess Torchwood is that the showrunner writes some of it, and everything else is done. You know, hired guns is the wrong way to put it, but they are all basically freelance scripts. So he said that's the model he's going to, which is interesting because I heard somebody else say that the Writers Guild in the States doesn't necessarily allow that you aren't necessarily allowed to behave that way just at whim, that you have to actually have the union sign off on it. So I don't know if that's true or not. And again, it's like, you know, and I think Bobby pointed this out last night on one of his Twitter messages. He said, you know, the people are sort of up in arms about it without actually stopping to figure out, you know, what it means, whether it's good or bad. So I don't know. I mean, it's not like I can list off the guys who were writing for the show in the first place. So
I personally think that, you know, if you are a showrunner and you've got like a really strong vision for something, you know, if you can write it yourself or with like a partner, just really keep tight control of what's going on and not write it by committee with a room full of people, then I think the more power to you.
Yeah. And I mean, it's, you know, and I have no issue with that at all, especially because everything's getting filtered through Darabont and it's an adaptation of a previously existing work. He's not a hack, so it's not like he's going to just put crap, you know, on the air, because, he's obviously got, like, a vision for it. And, you know, and really, I mean, it sucks for those guys, but on the other hand, he's going to do what's right for the show. So, but I'm sure Bobby will have a lot more to say about that. So, so that actually just came out, I think, late last night. This is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. We'll take a little break here. We'll come back. Penis Watch, Corpse Watch, and we'll get that top five David Bowie songs of all time straight ahead. You're listening to the Emerson News Network. Go nowhere!
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
Your stuff.
Come on, it's not your.
It is the Rick Emerson radio program. Let's all just... Is that playing on my computer or yours? I think it's on my computer over here. This the story about the women who were trying to... are you hearing that, Don?
Yeah, it's coming out of your...
Is it coming from my computer? I don't know where that's... Except it's not coming out of my computer because this music is coming out of my computer. That's bizarre. I'm hearing something. I'm sorry?
Do you have...
Oh, you know, there it is right there. It's that little speaker there. All right, that's what it is. Pay no attention. Nobody heard us do that right now. You were listening to the Rick Emerson radio program. Straight ahead, we got your top five penis watch. And yes, we'll be posting the mugshots of Eileen Brown and Schmecko Thomas coming to the Catskills. Take a moment to... I don't even know what the hell I'm doing. Schmecko Thomas just sounds like... Schmecko Thomas sounds like some sort of a low-budget clown your parents would get for your party. You know what I mean?
I'm Schmecko!
Yeah, I mean, it's like... But a clown, like, you wouldn't really want, you know? And that's not even the clown's professional name. That's the name of the drunk guy your dad knows who will play the clown. Who's going to play bingo? My friend, Schmecko Thomas, you know, from the lodge. He's going to come over.
He's got a big motor oil stain down the front of his costume.
Hey, kids. Who's ready for jubilance? All right. Well, in any event, this is brought to you by Sorrell's Vintages. They have been there since 1990. 3713 Southeast Hawthorne is where they are located. 3713 Southeast Hawthorne, right across from the Baghdad Theater, right next to Powell's Books. One side of the store is vintage furniture, collectibles, things for your home. The other side, new merchandise. And we should talk about the new merchandise for a second because, actually, you know, we talk so much about the vintage side, which is, you know, the vintage side is things from the Mad Men era, the Atomic Age era, you know, that, you know, mid-century modern stuff from, like, the 50s to the 70s. And it's great. It's beautiful. It's wonderful. It's all one of a kind. And, you know, it's very affordable, very competitive with new furniture, and much cheaper, frankly, less expensive than most stores that deal in vintage furniture and housewares and things. The other side of the store is just as great, and in an entirely different way. And I don't mean like how your mom means it when she says that. You know, to go to the other side of the store, it is entirely different, but it's just as great because it's stuff that is new. It's stuff that is smaller, and they're smaller, more decorative items. Everything from some of the year-round stuff. Ironically enough, the Day of the Dead stuff is there all year round because people just buy it apparently by the boatload. They can't get enough of it. They've also got some great they're not comic cells, but they're individual scenes from comic books that have been repainted in these brilliant, not fluorescent, but very, very bright colors, and then blown up and framed in these they're glass frames, but without a metal edge on them. And I'm not doing a very good job of describing it. But then
it's
like
a Roy Lichtenstein kind of a thing, where you see the actual color
where you
dots.
See the dots. It's not like a pop art thing where you see the dots, but it's just it's though they've zoomed in on a frame and then blown it up.
Okay.
But then sort of zoomed in again so it lops off the edges a little bit, so it's like a section of a frame.
Okay.
And it actually looks really, really great. It's like a section of a panel of a comic book. But it's just one of the things they've got there. And by the way, and here's the other thing. You go over on the other side of Sorrell's Vintages where they got the new stuff. They have this couch there that is like one of the best things I've ever seen in my life. If I could find, if there was, here's the thing, couch wouldn't even be there anymore if I had a place to put it. If there was a place to put it here in the studio, you know. I can almost put it underneath the dry erase board.
We could.
It's just a bad... The thing is, we put it here, and it's just going to get, like, Jägermeister spilled on it in the first day, right? I mean, we're going to come in, and, like, somebody will be... You know, there'll just be some sort of, like, horrific stain or something on it that we, you know, the provenance of which is unknown to us. But there's a couch there that is one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen. I'd be putting it in my house if I had a place for it. And that's on the new side of Sorrell's Vintages. It really is just an exceptional, amazing place. You know, I wouldn't say that it wasn't the case. Go by 3713 Southeast Hawthorne. Tell Danielle you heard about it here on the Rick Emerson Show, if you would, please. That is 3713 Southeast Hawthorne. Sorrell's Vintages, a proud sponsor of this, the Rick Emerson radio program.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
All right, it is the Rick Emerson program here at the Emerson News Network. Dan from New Zealand, our listener Dan from New Zealand, he is 29 today.
Happy birthday, Dan.
Thank you. Happy birthday, Dan. Thank you for listening. Thank you for being out there. Dan is a longtime listener. He says, yeah, eek, can you do a birthday shout? One more year left. Dan from New Zealand. So, yeah, happy birthday. Did you get the link for the mugshot, ladies?
No.
I sent it to your... I swear to God, I sent it to your. I might have sent it to your Dawn at Rick Emerson.
Okay.
Or I might have sent it to your Gmail thing.
I see it.
It's a Gawker link.
Yeah, it didn't show up right away, but I got it.
It's quite something. Here's the thing. I'm going to tell you this. These ladies, they don't look exactly like you think they would. They don't look. I haven't watched the news clip yet. I'm just looking at the mugshots. They don't look as overtly huge as you might imagine.
Hmm.
So I'm thinking that it must be. This guy has got to be like less of an apple shape, more of a pear shape, maybe. Maybe it like gets lower as it goes down, you know, the body.
Maybe they met after they both got weight reduction surgery. They had gotten like the band surgery or something, the stomach stapling of some sort. And they had lost a massive amount of weight and they had all of this like excess loose fat, loose skin. And they said, you know what we could do with this? And this is how we could make the money to get the plastic surgery to fix it.
So they have even, more rolls left over. There are even more places in which to store this merchandise.
I am totally pitching this as a movie script, by the way.
By the way, I mean, it's just so repellent. I'll get the mugshot posted here in just 1 second. You're listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program. We'll get to the top five here in just a few. Let's pay a final visit to the news desk today.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
No, they don't. They don't look at all like I thought they would look.
See, that's what I'm saying. It's not quite what you would expect. I mean, I have the audio from the news story, so we'll play that here in just 1 second. Let me before you. This is one of those things where I know you're going to ask me to play a watch theme.
Oh yeah.
And here's how I know that because
we have two watches left for one thing,
and also because I'm busy clicking on something else at the moment.
Right.
So I'm just uploading this photograph of these fine ladies, and then we'll be able to. We'll be able to progress.
Schmecko looks kind of sassy about it all in her mugshot.
Well, I mean,
kind of like, I'm sorry, what?
You gotta give it up to her. I mean, she probably has the presence of mind to know that she had a great idea, that maybe it didn't work out as planned, but that they were thinking outside the box. They were not just shoplifting in the same old way. All right, so if you go to rickemerson.com/pictures, visual aids for December 1st, 2010, you'll just see this. It looks like a clickable video, but it's not. It's just a screen capture of the clickable video, but it's enough to give you the mugshots of these two fine souls. So there you go. That's it. RickEmerson.com/pictures. Visual aids for December 1st, 2010.
By the way, if you go to the comments on the Gawker story that you sent me, the first comment is, my grandma's got huge hands that I did not inherit, a fact which she reminds me of daily, and prides herself on all the crap she can store in betwixt.
Wow.
Last visit, she had a bottle of prescription pills, a large beaded change purse full of change, an envelope with some 4x6 photos, her reading glasses, and my grandfather's reading glasses.
Was it like sort of a stupid human tricks kind of a thing, or did they just become accidentally ensconced there?
So y'all said, I want to take these girls car shopping.
God damn. Bette Midler does a great routine about determining her the weight of her bosoms and weighing them on one of those like postage scales that you use for cocaine or something. But she also talked about whether or not you should seek a breast lift. And one of the things that Cosmo apparently says, being the arbiter of all that women should do in their lives, Cosmo says, if you can. It was whether you could go braless and whether you need a lift. And the deal is, if you lift up your breast and place a pencil underneath, and then you lower the breast over the pencil, if the pencil hesitates for even a second before falling to the floor, or if it stays there, you shouldn't leave the house without, like, major support. And so she actually does a whole routine. This is on the Mud Will Be Flung Tonight album. She does a whole routine about the number of items that she was able to store. Like, she went right, you know, first it was the pencil, then it was the steno pad, then it was a couple of folding chairs, like, right underneath. And that also it would apparently cost $575 to mail her bosoms to Brazil, third class. All right, which watch shall we
do right now?
Let's do the corpse watch.
Why not? Just keep the horror rolling.
I would say another comment, too, on the story. So he said, how would you like to pay for this? Just put it on my flab.
I'm sorry. Where, do I have the... I don't think I have the wah-wah noise. I'm never prepared for these things. Let's just do a... All right. Here's your corpse watch.
I'm digging up bones, I'm digging up bones, exhuming things that's better left alone. I'm resurrecting memories of love that's dead and gone. Yet tonight I'm sitting alone, digging.
picking up bones.
What kind of a world is this? Here's Don Taylor with your corpse watch.
Well, this is less a story about a corpse than it is about a corpse accoutrement. The coffin, which used to contain the body of Lee Harvey Oswald, is to be sold at auction in a few weeks.
Really?
The man believed to have shot President John F. Kennedy was interred in a pine coffin for almost 20 years. He was exhumed in 1981 as his widow wanted to verify that it was him inside the coffin, and then reburied in a new casket in the same Texas cemetery. Auction officials say bidding for the item will start at $1,000, but they expect it to go much higher. There's a lot of interest in Kennedy and anything to do with his assassination, said Lori Intima, manager for the Nate D. Sanders Auction House. He was arrested, of course, an hour after President Kennedy was shot on the 22nd of November, 1963. He himself was shot 2 days later, so was never brought to trial. The exhumation of his body in 1981 was designed to lay to rest one of those theories that the man who was buried was a Soviet agent who had taken Oswald's identity to carry out the killing. The auction in Los Angeles also includes instruments that were used to embalm Oswald, his death certificate, an Easter card he sent to his brother, and a section of the car seat on which President Kennedy was sitting when he was shot.
Okay, of all these items, if you could have one, if money was not an object, or if it was like, you know, if it was your birthday, and I said, Don, it's your birthday, you may choose any one of these things to take home with you. What would it be?
Probably the Easter card.
You go for the Easter card.
I'd go for the Easter card, or it's a toss-up between that or the section of the car seat.
I want the car seat. I'm going right for the section of the car seat. Not the coffin itself, you wouldn't say?
No. I don't have any place to put that.
Well, but I mean...
But, you know, if I had the Easter card, I could just display it in my home. And if somebody said, who's the Easter card from? Funny you should ask. I'll say, that was from Lee Harvey Oswald to his brother.
What if you had a place to store the coffin? What if you had a big house? You could use it as a place to serve canapé.
Yeah, maybe.
How about this? You could get the Easter card, and then you could just go to Kinko's and have it duplicated and send that out as your Easter card every year.
Of course, his death certificate would be kind of cool, too, because you frame that and display that as well.
So. Yeah. See, I have a repro of Sharon Tate's death certificate, but it's like the original. Is they don't sell those the way
no.
you think they would. You'd think, and they don't like it when you ask if they sell them either. All right. There's your corpse watch for whatever the hell, for Wednesday, right here on the Rick Emerson Radio Program.
I'm digging up bones.
The thing is, this is not how jaded we've become. Like, following the fat roll story. A thing about, we're talking about the buying sections of bloody fabric from JFK's car and Lee Harvey Oswald's coffin.
Yeah.
Doesn't even faze
me. It's not as interesting as these shoplifting women with the body fat.
Oh, I gotta blanch even the tiniest bit at that. Jesus. All right. Real quickly, we got to the top five here in a second, so you can skedaddle, and so that Greg and Sarah can get in here. I want to play this audio, though. I have not listened to this in advance, so I make no claims at the quality of this. This is the news story from Channel 4 News. I'll credit the actual news source when we get it here, but it's just Channel 4 News in Oklahoma. This is the audio of the story for the women caught trying to hide stolen goods under their fat rolls. Eileen Brown and Schmecko Thomas.
Like also tonight, a bizarre heist.
Two women accused of shoplifting. And according to Edmond police, what makes this story so unusual is where the suspects were hiding the stolen goods. 28-year-old Aileen Brown and 37-year-old Schmecko Thomas.
That's not Schmecko.
Were arrested on complaints.
There's
of
no other E there.
Retailer. The women accused of trying to get away with about $2,600 worth of clothing.
This guy looks just like Fred Willard.
TJ Maxx store. News Channel 4's Bobby Miller joins us now live from the newsroom with more on the story. This is a strange one, Bobby.
KFOR.
Kevin, police tell us the two used their body parts to try to hide the stolen goods. But while their hiding places were creative, they didn't make it out of the store.
They tried to use their body parts to hide things.
Yeah, that's not really what happened at all.
No, she doesn't look terribly bright.
A lot of times people have strollers and it's a shame because they hide it under their kids or... They wear it under their clothes.
Anything they can open, they will put
these
things
are,
into.
This is the man on the street.
Especially shoes, boots, purses.
Normal ways shoplifters get away with their goods. But Edmond police say 28-year-old Aileen Brown and...
Is this woman trying to do like an Andy Rooney impression? There's a whole lot of, whatever happened to hiding things under a baby?
All right. 37-year-old Schmecko Thomas took a different route when they were arrested for shoplifting. Police say the two used their bodies to conceal $2,600 worth of merchandise.
Hey, does Schmecko Thomas in her mugshot look a little bit like Philo? She's got that kind of like, what? I got nothing.
Those were my boots. I had them when I came in.
Individuals were actually concealing them.
This is James Hamm.
Body where excess skin was underneath their chest area and up under their armpits and things of that nature.
Things of that nature.
They're concealing large items.
Like 4 pair of boots, 3 pair of jeans, a wallet, and gloves.
I'll say.
Oh, my. That's kind of gross.
Police say it was at this TJ Maxx that loss prevention officers found the duo stuffing items under their belly fat and breast.
One of the individuals had 3 boots concealed underneath her breast and bra.
Some holiday shopping, police say, will now lead to felony charges.
Well, they're pretty creative, you know, desperate times.
Police say Brown also had a knife in her purse they say she used to cut security tags in the store. Kevin?
Wow. All right. Well, there's really nowhere to go from there.
You can say it's pronounced Shemeco all you want, but it's Shemeco.
There's no, yeah, it's S-H-M. There's no additional vowel to be found at the beginning of that word. All right. If I ever do become a clown, I'm going to be Shemeco the clown, just so you
okay.
know. Right.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, fire.
Counting is wonderful, counting is marvelous, counting's the best thing to do. Counting is happiness, counting is ecstasy, I love to count, don't you?
It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. Don't forget, you can hear Dawn Taylor this afternoon at 4 p.m. Pacific Time at Cascadia.fm. You can also download that program at hamfistedradio.com. This, however, is your top five for Wednesday, December 1st, 2010. These are the top five David Bowie songs of all time in the sense of being a generalized representation of his oeuvre.
Yes, I believe so.
All right, so let me go ahead. All right, we are ready.
Okay. So our honorable mention is Station to Station. This is actually from his album, Station to Station, which was released in January 1976.
Any second now here. Okay. Sorry. Apparently it just does this for a while.
Oh.
This is going to be one of those things where it gets real loud real quickly, probably.
Well, this was a transitional album for Bowie, making a break between the light and heat of the Ziggy Stardust album and the cooler, more experimental collaborations he would do with Brian Eno later in the decade. Album's title track, it's just where it starts with the train. You've got this kind of dirge about the Thin White Duke, and then it turns into this upbeat, rollicking take on lost love and way too much cocaine. Bobby actually says that, and I think he makes a good point, Station to Station actually resembles Derek and the Dominoes' Layla quite a bit, with a little bit of Bruce Springsteen.
Now, it should come as no surprise that I've never heard this song.
Station to Station is a wonderful album. It's one of Bowie's best albums.
This already doesn't sound like most of the Bowie songs I've heard in my life. I like this. I know it sounds like it probably morphs into something else at some point, but I...
And this is guitarist Earl Slick, and you'll hear longtime E Street Band pianist Roy Bittan on the keyboards.
Now, let me ask you this. This song has 7 minutes left. We're 3 minutes into a 10-minute song. Should I skip ahead?
You should. Skip it. Skip
just
ahead
so
to
we
the
can
middle,
hear a little
so
bit,
we can hear
bit
the upbeat portion of the song.
Is it a concept album? Is it just a...
Most of his albums are, in a way, concept albums. I mean, Ziggy Stardust obviously was, but most of his albums, you know, even Heroes, Less Dance, whatever. I mean, there are really strong thematic elements throughout everything.
Around a centralized sort of theme or tone. This is Station to Station. That's the top five David Bowie songs of all time.
Number five is Beauty and the Beast. This is actually from his album Heroes, which was released in 1977. This is he recorded this in Berlin, and this is from the period when he was heavily experimental. He'd been listening to a lot of Europop, Kraftwerk, stuff like that. The guitarists here are Carlos Alomar and Robert Fripp.
Now, is he one of those guys that had a different band for every record, or was it studio musicians, or did he get a band and kind of keep them for a long time?
He worked with a lot of the same people for periods of his career, and then he would get specific musicians to come in and work with him on different things. He's always been very much like, he is a guy who is in charge of his projects. I mean, solely in charge of everything that he's doing. In Bobby's notes here, he points out that his late 70s period, with a lot of electronic sound experimentation, kind of left critics really cold, but fans really liked it a lot. And he had 3 Brian Eno collaborations in Berlin and came up with a lot of really terrific up-tempo sort of modern rock kind of stuff.
Yeah, see, I wish that I had heard some of this music when I was younger, when I was a teenager, where I think it would have... I mean, not that I can't appreciate it now, but I do regret that I missed out on a huge chunk of this because I wasn't exposed to it. Yeah, see, I like this. I mean, this is a great song. Excellent. These are the top 5 David Bowie songs of all time.
Number 4, Hang On To Yourself. This is from his album, The Rise and Fall of Ziggy Stardust and the Spider to Mars, which he recorded in London in 1972. This is one of my favorite Bowie songs.
Unsurprisingly, this is the David Bowie album with which I am most familiar because this had a lot of his radio singles on it. And it was the one probably, if I was going to be given a Bowie record when I was a teenager or something, this maybe would have been the one to do it with because I think it was the most accessible maybe to somebody like me because it had the strongest resemblance to other things I listened to. Mm-hmm. You know, it had like an Iggy Pop kind of a thing going on.
Yeah, and this and Suffragette City were the two really upbeat songs on that album, which was a narrative, and it actually was a story of a rocker's rise and fall and ends with the classic rock and roll suicide. And this has Mick Ronson on guitar.
These are the top 5 David Bowie songs of all time. What is number 3?
Number 3 is Watch That Man from the album Aladdin Sane, which was recorded in London and released in 1973. And this is Bobby made, again, in the notes he left me, very good point here. His entire Ziggy Stardust period, as he puts it, was a musical apple that never fell far from the Rolling Stones tree.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you can really hear that. You can hear the sort of dueling guitar thing in the background and that... See, now I could listen to something like this if... this would have fit comfortably alongside any number of the things that were in my collection, you know, from age 15 on. I should just get this, right? I should just pick this record up and just start with this.
Yeah, no, Aladdin Sane is a good place to start.
You know, it's weird. This sounds a lot like... this is really, really similar to some of the mid to late 70s Alice Cooper records that I have. Because they were both doing the kind of... as much as Alice Cooper is thought of as remembered incorrectly as sort of a heavy metal guy, it was really a lot of sort of trashy glam rock that he did. And there's a real... And Lou Reed, too. There's a real, like, Lou Reed thing going on here.
I can definitely hear the Lou Reed here.
Yeah. Boy, how great is that? Just get that real, like, nasty, snarly guitar.
Yeah. And this is also Mick Ronson, by the way, playing guitar.
Yeah, see, I'm just a total sucker for songs like this. It's like a really gay, fabulous Georgia Satellites. These are the top five David Bowie songs of all time.
Number two, Fashion. This is from his album Scary Monsters and Super Creeps, which was released in 1980. And Bobby, in a way, kind of likens this to how Pink Floyd in 1979 put a disco beat into Another Brick in the Wall. And basically, you know, using it to underscore the impersonal mechanical nature of primary education in the British public schools. And here it's a similar thing where he started writing disco songs, but kind of, in this case, made the genre sort of look at itself. It's sort of about the grotesquerie of the disco scene itself.
Was somebody on a great amount of cocaine during this period?
Well, as it says here in the notes, and I will read what it says here. If it's disco, it's the most threatening disco song ever made, and Bowie doesn't want you to dance. He wants you, your $300 silk shirt, and your Italian shoes up against the wall for inspection.
It has a weird, and I guess maybe this is the intention, it does have a weird, not icy, but a certain kind of clinicalism to it in terms of the sound, which I guess maybe what he was, you know, it was a deconstructive kind of disco song, maybe. So that's, it has a sort of, I don't know, a sort of menacing detachment to it that I kind of like.
Yeah, and more like crazy, weird Robert Fripp guitar.
Yeah.
But it's interesting. He basically underscores the whole idea of the, you know, what are commonly called the fashion police, with, you know, we're the goon squad and we're coming to town. And then the chorus is beep, beep.
Excellent. These are the top five. This was a great top five, by the way. Well done. I mean,
well,
you know.
Well run, Mr. Wiederquist.
Yeah, you know, not that I expected anything less. But it's like, you know, but I just, you know, as I said earlier, it's not that I dislike Bowie. I just have no sense for him one way or the other. So, I mean, you know, this was this really is a great sort of overview because these songs don't all sound the same. It's not like they're all the same kind of music. But it's, I feel like I've gotten sort of a, sort of a sampling of his many different approaches. All right, what is number one on the list?
Number one is Queen Bitch from the album Hunky Dory from 1971. Which is, as says here, absolutely a blatant nod to Lou Reed and the Velvet Underground.
Oh, yeah, totally.
This is all influenced by a late 60s visit he made to New York where he met Bob Dylan and Andy Warhol and Lou Reed and those people.
Wow. Down on the street. And just try hard to force us to flow. See, and I don't have a problem with that. A lot of people will take issue with somebody if they're just really deliberately aping somebody else's style, ripping off somebody else's sound. But it's like, I don't care about that. Like, a good song is a good song. Like, I don't, you know, it doesn't matter.
Well, one of the things I love about Bowie is much the same thing that I have always loved over the years about Elvis Costello, is they're both artists who will listen to other forms of music, listen to other artists' work, and then just go, hey, what can I do with
right.
this?
Yeah, what would it sound like if I did that?
Yeah.
That's why, actually, you know, as much as people like to knock on, like, the disco thing, there were certain artists that tried disco songs that it was actually, it really wasn't bad at all. I mean, like, the Stones got a lot of crap for doing Miss You, which was a disco, which was not, like, a terribly great song. But, you know, if you listen to the Rolling Stones, their catalog, something like Sympathy for the Devil, they were always sort of looking for new rhythms and new approaches to the rhythmic undercurrent of their song. And disco was, you know, it's not like any one form of music, except for reggae, is inherently bad.
Well, it's the same thing happened when Blondie recorded Heart of Glass.
Right.
I mean, they were ostensibly a punk band, even though they always had much more of a new wave, kind of a disco-y sound to them. But Heart of Glass was unapologetically, you know, a disco song. And they took a lot of crap for it.
Jibbity jibbity Jew. Excellent. Well done, Don Taylor. All right, and Mr. Robert Wiederquist, thank you so much for putting this together. That's fantastic. We'll just let this play us out. Don't forget the Rick Emerson Show returns again tomorrow, shortly after 1 o'clock. Pacific time. And before that, at noon, at Cascadia.fm for Legion of News. Don't forget, at Legion of News today, 4 p.m. Pacific time, you can hear Don Taylor and Mr. Bobby Fatboy Roberts with Hamfisted Radio. You can also download that later at hamfistedradio.com. We want to thank our guest, Ms. Kelly Clark, who joined us today from Willamette Week. Greg Nibbler, Sarah X. Dillon going to step into the studio next to do Fun Employment Radio. You can get that around 6 o'clock tonight at funemploymentradio.com. The Rick Emerson Show comes to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the Milk Packing District in glorious Southeast Portland, Oregon, the home of all good things. At the news desk, it is Don Taylor. Advanced technology and magic provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, executive producer Bruce Agler, chief of staff Cheryl Kanakoa. Made possible by a generous grant from y'all. It is Wednesday, December 1st, 2010. Thank you for listening. That is The Frequency, Kenneth. See y'all tomorrow. Bye now.